Big star me up. Big star me up. Big star me up. You make a dead man come. 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 You make a dead man come.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush met with Iraq's Sunni Vice President Tariq al-Hashimi today in Washington. He also heard from senior military commanders in Iraq via video conference. Tomorrow, President Bush will go to the Pentagon to meet with top defense officials. The president continues his listening tour to hear advice on how to possibly change course in the Iraq war. He is now expected to deliver a speech to the nation about any policy changes in January, not by Christmas, as was earlier expected. The Washington Post reports today that a group of military experts who met with the president yesterday were skeptical about the recommendations from the bipartisan Iraq study group, especially the ideas of reducing the number of U.S. troops in Iraq and the proposed talks with Iran and Syria. The Saudi ambassador to the United States, Prince Turki Al-Fazal, abruptly resigned today after only 15 months on the job. He returned back home to Saudi Arabia to spend more time with his family, according to diplomatic sources. In a main square in central Baghdad, at least 70 people, mostly poor day laborers looking for work, were killed by two car bombs that exploded nearly simultaneously. As many as 200 people were wounded. The truck that was used was filled with 440 pounds of explosives. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, a Shiite, called the attack a, quote, horrible massacre and blamed it on the Sunnis and Saddam Hussein sympathizers. An Associated Press cameraman was shot to death today in the northern city of Mosul. He is the third AP employee to be killed while covering the Iraq war. Interpol, the international police organization, has now joined the investigation into the poisoning death of Alexander Litvinenko, a critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin, who died in a London hospital last month. In six U.S. states today, federal agents raided meat processing plants as part of an immigration raid. An unknown number of illegal immigrants were arrested at the Swift Company plants. They are suspected of taking part in an identity theft ring. In Tehran, a conference to debate whether the Holocaust actually happened is in its second day. Iran's president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who called the meeting, has said that the Holocaust is a myth and once again today said that, quote, Israel will be wiped out. 67 people from 30 countries are attending the meeting. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. The Golden State Theater is proud to present two-time Grammy winner vocalist Diane Scherer. You've heard her perform with Dizzy Gillespie, Stan Getz, the Count Basie Orchestra, and Ray Charles. Now, don't miss Diane Scherer in a quintet setting Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. Diane Scherer has performed to sold-out audiences around the world. Diane possesses a 3.5-octave range and has been called the new First Lady of Jazz. The historic Golden State Theater is located at 417 Alvarado Street in downtown Monterey. Tickets for Diane Scherer and her quintet are just $29 and $39. For reservations, call 372-3800. The historic Golden State Theater proudly presents Diane Scherer and her quintet Friday, December 15th, 8 o'clock. 831-372-3800. And on the web, www.goldenstatetheater.com.
Health investigators are still looking for the cause of an E. coli outbreak among Taco Bell customers in the Northeast and Taco John customers in Iowa. The CDC says no food source has been confirmed yet as the cause, and tests on green onions came back negative. The Environmental Protection Agency introduced a new system to calculate fuel economy in cars. It will more closely reflect the real-world mileage that new car owners can expect and thus lower the mileage estimates for most new vehicles starting in 2008 models. The super jumbo jet, the Airbus A380, has been declared safe by European and American agencies to begin commercial flights. The massive double-decker plane, which has 555 seats, faced numerous delivery delays and was under development for 6 years. In October, the Commerce Department reported that the U.S. trade deficit narrowed by the largest amount in close to 5 years. A drop in oil prices, along with an increase in exports, are cited as reasons why. Federal Reserve policymakers held their last meeting of the year and decided to leave short-term interest rates unchanged at 5.25%. Light sweet crude is trading at $61.05 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 13 points at 12,315, the NASDAQ was down 11, and the S&P 500 down 1. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Whoa, howdy! Six minutes after 6 p.m. on the East Coast. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's time for another go-round. What do you say? A shoot-around, if you will. I say that because I'm leading into a labor issue. A labor issue that maybe you didn't even realize was a labor issue. I'm a sports kind of guy. I got to admit, I'm not that much of an NBA guy. But did you realize that there's a rather, and I didn't because I'm not an NBA guy. I watched some college hoops. I'm a college football person. I like Major League Baseball. But in the NBA, there's been an absolute uproar. I had no idea. The NBA is ditching its new basketball. Oh, yeah, Bob, what's this got to do with anything? Why are you talking about this, Bob? Don't you know there's a war to end? Yeah, I do, but there's meaning beyond meaning in this. The NBA is going to get rid of its microfiber composite basketball and bring back the old leather one starting January 1st. Now, call me crazy, but, you know, if you listen to this program, you know that I don't just pick stories out of the air. They got to have meaning. They got to have purpose. They got to have that certain something that je ne sais quoi that means that it can be used as an exemplar for greater meaning. The league is going to bring back its old leather ball starting January 1st. Now, the question one has to ask is if Commissioner David Stern has reached the conclusion that the ball they're using is the wrong ball, why not bring it back starting with, say, tomorrow night's games? I know that must certainly sound crazy, but if it's wrong now, it's not going to be any. It's going to be just as wrong on January 1st, and in the meantime, there's a lot of NBA basketball to be played that where fans just, they're not going to get what they paid for, are they? Because lots of players have been complaining about this ball. They've been saying, you know, the playing with this new microfiber composite ball, play with it started with the season itself and even a little bit before that, and no less than LeBron James Steve Nash of the Phoenix Suns, Shaquille O'Neal himself, they've all pointed out that the ball's unacceptable. Steve Nash even said that the synthetic material in the basketball cuts his hands. And still the NBA said, suck it up. So the lack of player input on the new ball prompted the National Basketball Association Players Association to file a National Labor Relations Board unfair labor practice charge against the league. Really? And David Stern, the commissioner of the NBA, is saying that the league should have sought more input from players before introducing the new ball. And he says that, you know, that, well, they'll make it as good as they possibly can. Shaquille O'Neal said that the new basketballs were like one of those, quote, cheap balls that you buy at the toy store, indoor-outdoor balls, when he started having to play with it when the Miami Heat opened their preseason training camp. Commissioner Stern noted, our players' response to this particular composite ball has been overwhelmingly negative, and we are acting accordingly. Now, everything else said that the new ball was more consistent than leather, that statistically, since it started in use, that there's been an improvement in shooting and scoring and ball-related turnovers, but still, the players hate it. So they're going to listen to the players. Now, on the one hand, I got to tell you, I have a hard time looking at an NBA basketball player as a working stiff. And it's kind of hard to listen to a multimillionaire gripe about the kind of ball he has to play with, you know? On the other hand, though, they filed... Oh, these poor guys, they're out of the loop. They filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board. They should have called. They should have called some real labor organizations before they did that. Because, the nurses' union could have told them a little thing or two about what you get from the National Labor Relations Board. Any number of organized labor outfits could have told you what you get by complaining to George Bush's National Labor Relations Board. You get bupkis. And if they don't ignore you altogether, then they finally sit down and make a decision and screw you. You know, if you look at the Kentucky River decision, that's the one that says that all registered nurses are supervisors and therefore not entitled to union representation. Remember that? Susie, would you help me out for a minute? I'm dealing with bed 12. Could you? I know it's icky. Could you go deal with the bedpan on bed 16? Congratulations, you're a supervisor. And so what they got out of it, the nurses, is they got told that they're not entitled to have a union. God only knows what might happen to the National Basketball Players Association. It could be that they'll get done if the National Labor Relations Board actually has a hearing. The decision could come out and say that the National Basketball Association now has to dribble the basketball with their forehead. I mean, that's how upside down, backwards, sideways, purple, polka dotted, and striped these Bushevics are, who despise working people, even working millionaires, really. It's just amazing to me. But there is, of course, an overarching meaning to all of this. there's something behind this, and it has to do with the way that the NBA responded to the complaint that the ball just wasn't working out. The NBA Players Association made it abundantly clear that no matter how statistically perfect this thing was deemed to be, that it was no good for the overall good of the game. And the NBA sat down with Spalding, who manufactures the ball, and Spalding told them, ball's great. It's a player's problem. And again, they looked at the statistics, and it was better, but, you know, Steve Nash said it was cutting his hands. So ultimately, David Stern, the commissioner, said, it's not working. It's just not working. So as a consequence of that, we're going to go back to the old-fashioned leather ball, because we're going to listen to our players on the floor instead of listening to high-toned, geniusy experts. Reckon we've ever heard, seen a situation like that before? I ask you in the main because I've got another story here, and Washington Post headline: experts tell Bush not to cut troops. Now the troops all know that they're walking around with targets on their back in Iraq. And even some people who aren't in Iraq realize that it's no longer workable. I shared with you last night the remarks of Republican Senator Gordon Smith of Oregon, who has seen the handwriting on the wall. What was that? Mene, mene, tekel, ufarsin. The handwriting on the wall. And Gordon Smith says that it is unacceptable to any longer tolerate American soldiers going in, getting shot by the same people every day, blown up by the same bombs, doing the same futile job, and that it's time to come home. Well, this is from this morning's Washington Post. President Bush heard a blunt and dismal assessment of his handling of Iraq from a group of military experts Monday. But the advisor shared the White House's skeptical view of the recommendations made last week by the bipartisan Iraq study group, sources said. Three retired generals and two academics disagreed in particular with the study group's plans to reduce the number of U.S. combat troops in Iraq and to reach out for help to Iran and Syria, according to sources familiar with the meeting who spoke on condition of anonymity because the session was private. So, in other words, they sat down with George Bush and said, boy, this is a mess. And he said, but I don't want to pull out. I don't want to cut and run. After talking about cutting and run as much, I don't want to cut and run. And they said, well, we don't want you to. We don't want you to, dear leader. Don't do it. Because, of course, they are gutless punks who do not have the courage to tell dear leader that he is, in fact, a miserable failure. Right? Yeah, right. So that's kind of, you know, where we are. Again, White House officials emphasized that although the experts gave a bleak assessment, they still believe the situation in Iraq is, and this is a quote, damn it, winnable. Winnable. After emerging from the morning session, Bush said, I appreciate the advice I got from those folks in the field, and that advice is an important component of putting together a new way forward in Iraq. And now we find out that we don't get the new way forward until the new way forward is entirely backward, a month from now. All the news stories all say that Dear Leader wanted to tell us what it was before then, but, well, it just wasn't possible. Yeah, I wanted to tell you sooner, but it couldn't. Because we're still working on it, and it's still highly secret. So compare that, if you will, maybe it just doesn't work at all, but compare that, if you will, with the NBA. Now, something as trivial as a damn basketball, and the NBA, although it takes them months to realize how wrong they were, listen to the troops on the ground. And it will be at some expense for the league to replace all the basketballs, because the production, the orders had already been placed in Malaysia or Indonesia or China or where the hell ever to make our basketballs. And now the NBA has to backtrack and go back to leather. And it's going to be pricey. Spalding's already told them that there's a lot of cost involved with this. But the NBA, in the long run, not that it's because a complaint was filed against them or anything, but they've decided that the basketball players are more important than the basketballs themselves. You can throw a bunch of basketballs out on the floor, but they're not going to do anything by themselves without the players behind them. And yet the President of the United States can't recognize something as obvious as that and has to bring in, flappers, flacks, who will come in and say, and come in and look at his profound nakedness and say, yeah, well, that's fine suit you got on there this morning, Mr. President. Love the tie. Iraq is a central component of defeating the extremists who want to establish safe haven in the Middle East. Extremists who would use their safe haven from which to attack the United States. This is really the calling of our time, that is, to defeat the extremists and the radicals. I can't read this crap without breaking up anymore. This man is insane. Dangerously insane. On the other hand, some officials have said there's a lack of thinking on other big issues. Now, stop with the other big issues. There's a lack of thinking! Oil, the economy, infrastructure, and jobs, said one source who was briefed on the interagency discussions and requested anonymity because talks are ongoing and he doesn't want to go on relief anytime soon. Bush asked, now we have to be told this by the Washington Post, just in case we would think that he's just a little puppet and only does what he's told, and he's howdy-doody sitting on Buffalo Dick's lap. We had to be told that during yesterday's White House meeting, Bush asked all the questions except for one at the end from Cheney. You know what the last question asked by Cheney was, don't you? You don't want me to shoot you in the face, do you? That was the only question Dick Cheney asked. So, that's where we are tonight. That's right, the White House has less perspicacity, less insight, and gives less of a damn about American soldiers than the NBA does about basketball players. I don't know. What's the lesson out of that? Is the lesson out of that that we need to pay each of our soldiers several million dollars so they'll be listened to for a change? What did we have out of that article the other day? One soldier said, they're saying they'll bring us home in 2008. I think it's more like 2012. These guys aren't stupid. They know what's going on. They know far, far too well. So we'll take a break. When we come back, your phone calls. 877-443-2366. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. Fire it up! I'm Bob.
spirits up. We're here tonight, and that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The party's on, the feeling's here. That only comes this time of year. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The choir of children sing their song.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Past the hour, I'm Bob, and this is Head On. The planets are back into their proper alignment. You didn't know it, but I was producing that segment myself, waiting on Agnes to get back into the studio. I'm going to file a National Labor Relations Board complaint. That's what I'm going to do. No, because then I'll find out I'm a supervisor, and then I'll really be screwed. No, let's go to the phones. Our good friend David joins us from Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm quite well, and I know a little bit, being a sports junkie, you know, kind of like you are. NBA's down the list of what I follow, but I know a little bit about that. And you've drawn an amazingly accurate parallel, because here the commissioner of the NBA with, see if this sounds familiar to you in any way at all, to limited a group for discussion, sketchy input, and lousy research, decided based on one nudge in the ribs from a family member, so the current story goes, let's change the basketball.
Yeah.
Now, all right, now we've got a little bit of an aside. Don't anybody at any point in time think the commissioner of the NBA is an easygoing guy that doesn't have an ego the size of talent? So for that guy to find reverse on his management decision steering wheel column, that's hard to do. That position is rusty. That guy doesn't back up very often at all. About the same number of times you expect.
No, his reverse doesn't beep anymore.
No, no, he's grandfathered in. Reverse is a national headline. And sure enough, once it all kind of shook out, and enough of those guys that were making him a bazillionaire, meaning the people that really mattered.
Yeah.
Once it came back up through channels, hey, commish, I'd like to see most of this basketball put in a place that, well, the orifice is much smaller than the ball. Let's just say that. He swallowed hard and said, leather basketballs as soon as Spalding can make the darn thing. So, yes, he's a much better manager than W is a manager.
Well, and I'm guessing he's got some people around him that are better than those who are around W, too, because, you know, somebody eventually came to him and said, you know, Mr. Commissioner, they filed a National Labor Relations Board complaint over this.
David Stern is an East Coast guy. He played basketball in the era when, you know, a foul meant there was something red on court.
Yeah.
He's got friends that he probably plays squash with that finally said over a martini that would drop an elephant, Dave, you really got your foot in your mouth. You really need to do something about this. Lord knows he did it.
Microfiber basketballs, but yeah, go ahead.
The best phrase for that I've heard is pleather.
Yes.
I like that one. Pleather. Anyway, I wanted to lay off of this, but dadgummit, you brought up another sports analogy, and I'm going to run one by you, and I'll get it done, but it'll take me a minute or two, because pleather.
That's okay. You know, I like doing this. I've gotten some emails saying knock off with the sports already, but you know what? I enjoy it. So
I'll get this one home, and you'll probably hear the punchline coming, but if you can, leave it for me, would you?
Okay. I will sit here quietly.
You know, there's our brother-in-arms, Wayne. There isn't a bigger Steeler fan on the planet, and I'm totally enamored with the Green Bay Packers Football Club. But for the next 3 months or so, no less than that, two months, I am now declaring myself the world's biggest non-ticket buying, don't own any gear, don't have anything in black and gold, New Orleans Saints fan on the planet. Suddenly, the New Orleans Saints, after playing in, Wichita, Fayetteville, Shreveport, where the heck else did they play last year? Somehow they get back to their home thing, the dome that was such a nightmare. No joke about this. The Superdome was such a nightmare for so many people for so long, and it was so emblematic of the worst possible damaging neglect by governmental agencies. Well, suddenly these guys have a record and a strength and a game 12, 13 games into the NFL season. If you're rolling, you're rolling for a reason. You don't get lucky with a record at this point in the NFL season. And I watched these guys the other night absolutely destroy the Dallas Cowboys. And it occurred to me, how wonderful it would be, just as a feel-good story, the Saints are almost a lock to make it into the playoffs, some ways up now. And last year, the lowest-ranking team in the NFL playoffs turned out to be Super Bowl champion. Right, Wayne? I'm telling you, Wayne, I remember. Wouldn't it be something if the New Orleans Saints, in spite of all that has happened to that year, that to that city in the last year and a half, wouldn't it be something? They get into the playoffs, they beat this team, they struggle past another team, the next thing you know, they're at the Super Bowl, and they defeat somebody and become the world champion? I mean, the NFL, the champion of the National Football League.
Right.
Wouldn't that be, like, really, really, a huge warm fuzzy?
No, it would be the feel-good Cinderella story of the year.
You know, because they got this funny-looking little coach that wears a visor, and it looks like he's probably a kid's model, and he's a, I mean, I'm sorry, the guy's the coach, Sean somebody, shows you how little I really know about him. The guy's a drop-dead, he's a body double for Kenny Chesney, and a you know, country music singer, and I'm thinking, that's pretty odd.
And he does, in fact, wear the Steve Spurrier Memorial visor.
He does wear the Darth visor. But it occurred to me that if that story would go to its natural conclusion, selected members, if not every single one of the New Orleans Saints and their coach and their owner, most of the coaches, could end up making a visit to the White House. And in the course of George Walker Bush saying some really stupid crap, maybe one of those football players would just say, excuse me, Mr. President, but, you know, in spite of all odds, against everything that was thrown at us, we played by the rules and we did our job the way it ought to be done, and we persevered and we took all the knocks and blows and stitches and all of that stuff. And we're the world champion of this football league. Mr. President, is there any chance that some of that same level of effort could be applied to resurrecting the most creative city in North America, you stupid little shit?
Yep.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Eat it, FCC.
Thanks for letting me get way big old circle and come back to something that ain't exactly sports.
No, but that's enough to make a bona fide pay attention on Sunday every week from now on, Saints fan. And you can call me a bandwagoner, but you've given me a reason to live past the college football season.
This is a reason for those of us that hate bandwagon jumpers to say, hey everybody, be a Saints fan. Wish for it. And
well, see, and that's the thing, because oh God, I can hear the other end of that one too, David. I can see the jug-eared, pig-eyed little lout sitting there saying, this shows the magnificence of the American spirit as the New Orleans Saints have risen above adversity like phoenix from the swamp waters.
He would lay out a straight line that a dead man could create a punchline for. There's somebody in that group of men. Should that football club win the ultimate title in the National Football League? There's one guy that might just blurt it out, because they've been on a mission for a year and a half. They have absolutely...
Well, they've been on a mission to just stay in New Orleans. Physically, as in have a place to play, but also financially, as in their owner was ready to cut and run.
Their owner got a call from Tagliabue, Mr. Tagliabue, before he retired, commissioner of the National Football League, and just said, You've got enough. You move that team and it's me and you. So he had to be whacked around, but he had to get an elbow in the rib to pull back. So, you started out with a sporting analogy that went to political, and I thought, all right, I'm going to waste 10 minutes of this man's wonderful.
Well, there was no waste involved, because at the end of Tom Robbins' probably greatest novel, Still Life with Woodpecker, he draws some conclusions, and one of those conclusions, David, is everything is part of it.
I agree.
And I'm a believer in that. We reflect our national dreams. We reflect our national desires, our hopes, our ambitions, our griefs. We reflect them in cultural things. You know, we have become a vacuous society, and therefore, the most recognized woman in this country is Paris Hilton. There's a reason. You know what I mean? It can be reflected in other places as well. The story about the NBA just sort of jumped off the monitor at me in terms of the meaning of things.
Well, you know, if Stern had applied the same methodology that George Bush applied, he would have pulled in two or three more people that had nothing to do with the game and say, "Don't you like this basketball? I can give you another star on your, I mean, I'm sorry, I can affect how your retirement goes. Don't you like this basketball?" And what the hell else is George Bush doing but pulling people in that he can bully rag into agreeing with him?
That's the whole point.
He gets a two-star general in front of him that hasn't got a bit of Iraqi dust on his patent leather shoes and his properly tailored uniform and says, "Don't you think we're doing the right thing?" And he is tapping that general on those two-star boards and holding up three fingers off to one side and going, nodding his head, "Don't you think everything is going the way it should, and aren't I right?" And General What's-His-Nuts is going to be saying, "Yes, sir, Mr. President, right on, sir."
Well, it's like bringing another chef into the kitchen and looking down into the pot and saying, "It's a damn shame what's happening to those lobsters." "Oh, yes, sir, but you can't take them out yet. They're not done."
Thank you.
You know, I forget who it was that once remarked that conscription is to a human being what boiling water is to a lobster. It may be his finest moment, but he's not there by choice.
I like that one.
And the same applies to our troops. You know, I'm sick and tired of these experts. You know, these experts that, like you say, no dust.
No. Haven't been there, aren't going there.
And that gratuitous line in the story about, "Oh, by the way, George asked all the questions but one."
He can read, sort of. Great. Fine.
Yeah, but they wouldn't tell us what the questions were, David.
No, they wouldn't. They don't dare. And, the minute I heard, you know, I had great hopes. I think I had higher hopes for the study group's report than you did. You were right. I wasn't. I had greater hopes, but then, what was it, less than 48 hours, Bush is saying, first of all, it came out on a Wednesday, and by the end of the day, Friday, he was saying he had read it. And I'm qualified to fly an airplane and will do so without said plane. Oh, I've read it. And then he says, "But I will involve other experts, especially," and he had a laundry list of suck ups and, you know, kissers. And I just went, "That's it. He's going to keep asking. He's going to keep asking suck ups until he gets the answer he wants. And then Mr. Snow, oh Lordy, Mr. Snow. Mr. Snow said, "Oh, right after Christmas, we're going to have a position speech by the president. Inference, it'll be mind expanding." So then they look over the real options, and they know there are no options to leave.
Mind expanding, David? Does that mean it's going to be like acid?
Some days I think he's taking it. Some days I wish he would. Maybe more than he's taking now.
Some damn Christmas present.
Oh, yeah. And then suddenly, Mr. President won't be talking about that until after the first year. Simply because they know there's nothing to say but load them up and go.
Well, that's the thing. When you compare it with the Iraq study group, as I understand it, and I did go and read it, mostly.
I'm sure a lot more than them did.
And it makes it very clear that the thing is that this is not a cafeteria plan.
That part of it, I completely agree with.
You buy the whole dinner or none of it.
Exactly. None of this column A, column B stuff. look, boys, this is sit down, pay the bill.
And so, you know, it's abundantly clear that even if the Iraq Study Group plan was certifiably genius, if they had finally come to the conclusion that got it all done, it wouldn't matter. These people in the White House would still feel the need to tinker with it. Well, you know, we'll talk to Syria. We'll send a Christmas card to Syria, but we're not sending anything to Iran. Those people are crazy. And they make me crazy. I don't know. I think back to the everyday lessons that we as ordinary workaday Americans learn through the course of our lives. You know, the ones that begin, one, read all the directions before going any further. And there's always a kid in the class who's busily filling out the dots before he's read the 17 instructions.
Absolutely, usually more than one.
And usually instruction number 17 is make no marks on the paper.
Precisely.
And George is rushing through the book. Oh, I got this is easy.
Oh yeah, what's the thing for the new American century? What's the short?
PNAC.
Oh yeah, the PNAC guys. Yeah, throw the instructions away. We create our
own. We are the Vulcans. They said that, you know, we're the Vulcans.
Yeah, we create our own reality. Your reality doesn't matter. The world's reality, Earth, laws of physics, dead people, you know, Fly's Law, stuff doesn't matter. We are the new reality. What a bunch.
Yep.
Well,
by the boatload.
Indeed.
Thanks, David. And don't ever worry about a sports analogy. They're all welcome here.
I'll keep it to a minimum. I'm way caught up on that sort of stuff, and I'll make sure I don't overload it. And all of you listeners, it's my fault. You know,
is not. I started it.
Yeah, but I sure kept it going.
David, take care.
Talk to you later.
Have a good night. Bye now. And onward to our good friend Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
What about the sports analogy? I don't understand.
Well, it's too much to really go through, but suffice to say that the NBA, the commissioner of the National Basketball Association, has considerably more respect for his basketball players than George has for our troops.
Oh, are they going to use some type of use another the old type basketball now?
Going back to leather.
Well, why did they leave that in the first place? I don't understand.
Well, I don't either.
I don't understand all the emphasis that all these professional sports get anyway, to tell you the truth. I think it's ridiculous.
No, it provides enjoyment for people.
Well, so do the...
bread and circuses, absolutely.
So do the Christians and Lions of the Colosseum in Rome.
Now, there's something I'd like to see brought back, but never mind. That's okay.
That's not funny, Bob. Not at all funny.
Okay, the Fundies and the Lions, Jim.
That's even remotely funny.
You mean we can't even light the Vatican Gardens with them? I'm kidding, Jim. Jim.
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm just listening
to
you.
That's a joke. Go on, though.
God's listening to you, too. The reason I called you is that I was looking at the cover of Vanity Fair, and there are two articles. One by David Rose, Bush's war advisors turn on him in Iraq.
Yeah, this is the January issue that's out now.
Mm-hmm. And also the Mark Foley's private life and excerpts from some of the emails. Quite interesting.
Oh, no. There are more emails now?
Well, I mean, there's some that he had that are pretty salacious. With,
I mean, this is beyond what was already reported in the news?
Well, I mean, I'm certainly not going to read them on the air, but I mean, they're talking about all types of... Well, they're not discussing astronomy and the perturbations of heavenly bodies, but more or less the perturbations of physical bodies.
Gotcha.
That's basically what they're talking about.
Very, 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 very put with great dignity, Jim. But the David Rose article is the one that everyone's been watching for.
Well, basically, most of his advisors are jumping ship, and they're just trying to run for cover as best they possibly can.
Yeah, and isn't the basic theme, we had a great idea, but George screwed it up?
Effectively, they're trying to each one present his own point on how this could have happened, could have, would have, should have, and of course, because George was the one who had the sign on his desk saying the buck stops here, and so they're trying to put it on him. But I don't think it's going to work. I mean, that dog won't hunt. They're riding horses that simply won't run.
Well, I don't think, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think you can run away from it because they were the biggest proponents of this stuff. And it didn't fail because George screwed it up. It failed because it was a bad idea. Starting preemptive wars is not something that civilized society will tolerate in the 21st century.
Effectively and essentially, absolutely. And the American Enterprise Institute was one of the conservative think tanks that were providing advice. And, you know, of course, there's Cheney up there saying, we're not going to do anything differently. But I think they will be doing something quite differently in a few months. I really do. And I think this study on Iraq is not going to fall on deaf ears. And I don't think that George is going to be able to ignore it.
Well, it's not a question of whether he ignores it. It's a question of whether he implements it, isn't it?
Well, let's put it this way. If he doesn't pay attention and if he doesn't try to do something differently and if he doesn't admit the error of his ways, and I mean very quickly, then basically he's going to be like Nero in his golden house when his own Praetorians turned on him. And that's exactly what's happening to him right now.
Well, eventually, I think you will see in the next 2 years, if he's not impeached, and I don't see a lot of hope for that, eventually you will see him isolated and alone.
Oh, I do see him being impeached. I envision that a year from now.
Well, I hope you're right. I very much want it to be right.
Like I say, patience. I mean, it's going to take a little while for things to get going, but when they start these investigations and they start seeing who did what to whom and where money went and things of this nature and the lack of staff study reports that were really truthful in nature, and adequate in resource and development as far as what led to the second Iraqi war, I think you're going to see a lot of people being placed in some very embarrassing positions, and I think they're going to have to pay for it. I mean, the righteous indignation of the world and the American people over the wasted numbers of Iraqi and American lives, not to mention the untold billions and billions and billions and up into the trillions of dollars that have been just thrown away for nothing. I mean, what do we have to show for all of this? A country that was once had the fifth ranked economy in the world has now been bombed into the Stone Age, and they don't have potable water and electricity 8 hours a day. And you've got Arab world stirred up like a hornet's nest. I mean, that's what we have to show for all this. And when things like this happen, I mean, it's just like Nero burning Rome on the Christians.
No, we had a story. We had a story last night, Jim. Everybody's so fond of saying, "Well, you know, in the Kurdish North, it's all working great." Well, it turns out the Kurdish North has 1 hour of electricity a day.
Well, it's not working great for anybody there. Don't people understand?
I
don't know who it's working great for. Who is it working? I mean, who's benefiting?
It's working great for Bechtel. It's working great for Halliburton. It's working great for CSCI. It's working great for Blackwater.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they just may have to give some of that money back. And they just may be brought into federal court. And some of the people who are benefiting greatly from all these great profits, kind of hard to enjoy those when you're behind four concrete walls.
Well, you know, it's worth remembering that Custer Battles was hailed into court for the money that they stole from us in Iraq. And there was a verdict had in federal district court, and it made it up to the Circuit Court of Appeals, and the Circuit Court of Appeals just said, no, sorry, game over, and vacated the verdict.
Well, when did this happen?
We had Chris Floyd on talking about that 4 or 5 months ago.
I'll guarantee you this, if another decision comes up the pipeline, they won't vacate that one.
Well, it really depends on which circuit court you get.
Well, I'm talking about the one that's right there in Washington, D.C., the one right before the Supreme Court.
Well, but the D.C. circuit doesn't always have jurisdiction.
Well.
It depends, you know, just which circuit you get depends on which district court you filed it in.
Okay.
And I can't remember. I think this one went to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, same one that handles West Virginia. And these are the meanest, nastiest, most conservative, most loathsome right-wing judicial activists of any appeals court in the United States. And they just looked up and said, you know, this would be bad for Georgia, you know, to the judgment.
Okay. Well, we shall see.
We shall indeed. I want him impeached. Want him impeached.
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate.
But by the same token, working on impeachment is not, and I hope you agree, a substitute for bringing him home.
No, I mean,
end the war now. Bring the troops home. You know.
Well, I mean, that will follow in due course. That will follow in due course, but it's not going to happen the way you would like for it to happen.
No, I want to start loading planes now.
Well, that's not going to happen.
No, obviously, because it's
because
not happening.
Because, number one, it's just not possible logistically, and it's not possible.
It's logistic, but you'll agree, Jim, it's logistically possible to try to get started.
Well, I mean, that's like saying, do something, you just got to clean it up.
Well,
that's
I mean,
we've done already.
You know, obviously, the American military got those soldiers into Iraq.
Well, they're going to have to get them out, but I mean, they're going to have to come out, and they won't come out as quickly as I would like to see them come out, but come out they will, and come out they will to stay.
Well, the sooner the better, because the longer we wait, the more people die.
Well, unfortunately, that is...
I mean, that's a mathematics we just can't get around, isn't it?
Well, that's the reason wars are fought. I mean, that's the natural consequence of war, unfortunately. That's just one of the side effects of it.
Yeah.
It's not a game in which people participate without shedding of blood.
And this, you know, the greatest tragedy of all this, Jim, is the fact that it is a natural consequence, but by the same token, war by itself is not something that has to be engaged in. We were not compelled to fight in Iraq.
Well, no, that was a war in which we invaded a country which was in no way threatening us, and it was basically like one of those yellow journalism type things. You know, you give me the headlines, I'll give you the war, that type situation, basically.
Yeah.
It was just yellow dog type thinking.
Cooked up, dummied up, fudged up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get out as quickly as we got in. And that's going to be the situation. But eventually, that country will, in my opinion, effectively cease to exist.
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Well, so.
And we get and I wouldn't be surprised to see horrors come out of that civil war that make Sarajevo and Srebrenica look like a day in the park. And those things were the worst genocidal horrors that we had seen since World War II. At least on European soil.
Well, I don't think you're going to see the people who are responsible for it get away scot-free. I really don't. I believe they're going to have to pay some type of price. Some type of retribution can and must be, you know, exacted from them. I mean, you know, Richard Nixon, my God, he made the mistake of lying about some tapes.
Yeah, and Richard Nixon was at least arguably competent.
And nobody was killed, really, because of what he did.
Well,
and, of course, now, look at this. I mean, when you compare the magnitude of what caused one president to resign and face impeachment, and then you look at what's been done here, it almost has to follow.
You would think that it would, wouldn't it? Wouldn't you?
Well,
I would think
so. My God, if they're going to... Yes, because Nixon tried to redact a whole bunch of stuff and have Congress and Senate, who could even see, read it, and pull those kinds of pranks and stuff like that and tell everybody he's not a crook. Well, I mean...
Well, move it a little further into the future. I mean, the bar of impeachment, the modern bar of impeachment, was established by the Republican Congress.
Well, then let them meet that standard, because, I mean, they certainly lowered the bar on Bill Clinton. And it was only by one vote that he was not removed from office, or real sick of the Senate trial for something that really didn't, as far as I'm concerned, mount to a hill of frostbitten beans. But, I mean, we're talking
right,
about a lot of lives and big money.
And ultimately, that's the question I think that the American people deserve to ask is, you know, the, and it's not about payback, and it's not about gotcha. It is about the fact that a standard has been established that says that something as trivial as lying about sex is enough to get a president potentially removed from office. So if that's the case, how about, you know, 750,000 dead civilians and 3,000 dead Americans? Is that enough to merit impeachment?
I would think so.
I would, too.
And I think that's the reason that he is headed straight for the impeachment process. I mean, it has to follow. If it doesn't, then it all means nothing.
Then the Republic, if it does not, it seems to me that if we do not consider impeachment, then we have effectively abandoned that portion of the Constitution. We have given it up until.
I mean, you know, not only that, but I mean, if these are high crimes and misdemeanors, I don't know what the hell is. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, impeachment is simply a logical, you know, it must follow. I mean, there is no way that it cannot.
Well, I suppose our job is to wait and see, and maybe militate a little bit and demand impeachment of our elected representatives.
Well, whatever you could do, but I think as long as you're going to have people like the Washington Post and Tom Friedman, people like that, and New York Times and New York Post, even some of us there articles, Vanity Fair, and other things coming out revealing what's been done, and, you know, not to mention the world opinion, this, that, and the other. I think it will have to happen. I mean, how can this man continue to do what he has done and not pay the consequence? Because, I mean, this man is a seriously dangerous person.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like I say, what he's doing is comparable to the crimes of Nero and his burning Rome on the Christians. I mean, that's what he's done. This man is burning down part of the Middle East and part of his own country, and he's trying to blame it on the wrong people when he himself is responsible. So, you know, I say, George, you have two choices. You can suffer the judicial process or fall on your own sword. That's all I had to add tonight.
Well, I appreciate it. That's a pretty stark choice, and one that I don't disagree with.
Well, I mean, let's face it. He might have somebody there to help him.
Well, impeachment is in the Constitution for a reason. It wasn't put there by the framers.
No.
As an ornament. It's,
no.
It is a political means by which we hope to avoid bloodlettings and anarchy and civil war. And if we don't use it, we lose it.
And he is, as far as I'm concerned, an enemy of the Constitution with this accelerated power of the presidency that he's tried to engineer. And he's tried to overturn the other two branches of the government. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, these are not only impeachable offenses, but, I mean, basically the unitary concept of the presidency is in itself inherently treasonous.
I tend to share your estimation. Jim, thank you very kindly, and have yourself a good night, all right?
All right, same here.
Bye now. 3 minutes passed, and we go to the news. We'll come back to more of your phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head-on, or if you feel more like typing, bob@headonradio.com. Any way you want to reach the show, or not at all, I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The president continues his so-called listening tour to hear advice on his Iraq strategy. He has postponed his speech on the topic until January. 7 out of 10 Americans disapprove of how President Bush is handling the Iraq war. That's according to the latest ABC News Washington Post poll. 6 out of 10 say the Iraq war is not worth fighting. In the main square in central Baghdad, at least 70 people, mostly day laborers looking for work, were killed today by car bombs exploding nearly simultaneously. 200 people were wounded. In Mosul, an Associated Press cameraman was shot to death today. He is the third AP employee to be killed while covering the war. The Committee to Protect Journalists say that at least 89 journalists have been killed there since the Iraq War began. In Jerusalem, the Israeli Supreme Court today ruled that Palestinians could seek compensation from Israel for damages caused by the Israeli army. The court unanimously threw out a law preventing Palestinians from seeking compensation. Interpol has now joined the investigation into the radiation poisoning murder of Kremlin critic Alexander Litvinenko. The FBI, Scotland Yard, and German police are already involved. In six states today, federal agents raided meat processing plants. An unknown number of illegal immigrants were arrested. They're suspected of taking part in an identity theft ring. Operations at all six plants of the Swift Company were temporarily suspended during the raids. The company has not yet been charged. In L.A., 800,000 current and former students, faculty, and staff of the University of California were notified a campus computer was hacked. Names and some personal information may have been exposed. It is considered one of the largest breaches of computer security at a higher education institution. In Washington today, the Bush administration asked an appeals court to overturn a federal judge's ruling that requires U.S. currency to be modified to assist the blind. The U.S. is one of the only nations on Earth whose paper currency is all the same size. Incoming House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said she would introduce legislation to increase oversight of the Congressional Page Program. She said the young people who participate in it are, quote, a national treasure and must be protected, end quote. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Hugh Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why I got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Oh,
absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Two crew members of the Space Shuttle Discovery today are conducting the first of three scheduled spacewalks. The astronauts are to replace the space station's electrical system. Health investigators are still looking for the cause of an E. coli outbreak among Taco Bell customers in the Northeast and Taco John customers in Iowa. The CDC says no food source has been confirmed as the cause. In Beijing, air pollution is so bad people have been told to stay indoors. All of the city's monitoring stations are reporting particulates seven times higher than is safe. Scientists say it is some of the worst air pollution ever recorded in Beijing, which already has a reputation as one of the most polluted in the world. The Treasury Department reports that mortgage delinquency and foreclosure rates are on the rise. The impact could be greatest for low-income families who took out high-interest loans. A national real estate brokerage firm says the number of homes listed for sale in 18 major U.S. metropolitan areas last month was down 4% from October. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.95 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 13 points at 12,315. The Nasdaq down 11 at 2431, the S&P 500 down 1 at 1410. Gold ended trading at $634.10 an ounce. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, If you want to read the article that Jim was referring to, you can go to VanityFair.com. The name of the article by David Rose is Neo Culpa. Neo Culpa. If you recognize the name of David Rose and you are a longtime listener to this program, you might recognize it from the fact that Mr. Rose has joined us for a conversation in the past. In fact, it was with regard to his book on Guantanamo that he joined us. It was a fascinating conversation. I'm going to try to get him back on the program to talk about the this Neo Culpa article. Neo Culpa, VanityFair.com. And, you know, this is a real... It's every bit as astonishing as Jim described it. It's Richard Perle. It's David Frum, Kenneth Edelman, and a whole bunch of other neocons who said, "Oh well, yeah, you know, what are the lines?" Oh, here's one of them from Richard Perle. Iraq is a very good candidate for democratic reform. It won't be Westminster overnight, but the great democracies of the world didn't achieve the full, rich structure of democratic governance overnight. The Iraqis have a decent chance of succeeding. What a darn fool. Anyone who even bothered to take a look at what a war in Iraq would bring about would have known that this... But these guys... No, they were busy making up their own reality. So that's what you get. VanityFair.com, Neo Culpa. There's maybe we'll go through some of it later this evening. Right now, let's go to the phones, though. We are joined by our good friend Spike, calling from Easton, PA, the Easton Assassin he is. Hey, Spike, welcome to the program.
Oh, Gonzo, greetings. I have to say that the thing that inspired me to call tonight was the talk of sports right off the bat, because there's not too many shows in the left that will reference sports at all. The right does it like it's going out of style. But I can only think of one other national show that isn't GOP talking points, and it's by the way, has a reputation of being a very conservative, quote, progressive thought show.
Oh, what, Big Eddie?
Yeah. He's the only other non-Republican show I can think of that talks sports. So, in my opinion, the more the merrier. And also, I think the whole reason they had that basketball this year was just to sell more merchandise, and it didn't work. And I find it funny that they listened to the players about the basketball, but they didn't listen to the players about the whole dress code thing, because remember that was going to make the action better in the NBA if they wore suits to the game?
Right. I do remember that.
I feel
maybe it'll make the action better if they play in the suits.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, he's ripped his Armani trousers.
Yeah. I'd like to see Shaft slam dunk in Hart Schaffner Marks sports jacket there, you know?
Oh, good suit call there. Yeah, see, look, just because we're on the left doesn't mean we're a bunch of tasteless boors or the sports sissies.
Yeah, well, look at the New York Mets are a good example. Two of their biggest fans that come to the games all the time are Tim Robbins and Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
but
no, you're right.
Not the only person on the left that watches sports.
Yeah, but you're right though. No, I guess it's somehow déclassé, or it proves a lack of seriousness or a lack of gravitas that the left doesn't talk. But you know what? Spike, for my money, an afternoon in the stands, even in the cheap seats in the nosebleed section at Mountaineer Field in the fall. Or for that matter, before spring turns into summer, to be down here in Charleston at the little single-A ballpark, I can't think of a better afternoon.
Yeah, well, baseball has always had the reputation of being, quote, the thinking man's sport, although you want to see how poor of a thinker George Bush is. Look at his 10 years running the Texas Rangers. Other than
ain't that the truth.
Stadium, the two guys they got for Sammy Sosa, I think, had a combined career of 90 games in Major League Baseball after they were traded for Sammy Sosa.
Yeah.
So that should be a good example of the competency and thinking level.
Well, see, I'll take hell in the email for this, but it's kind of an open secret. I've even been known to play golf. Not well, mind you. Not well.
I've never attempted golf because I figure I'll destroy the clubs halfway through the game.
Well, for me, it's, you know, I know it's a snobbish game. It's elitist, blah, 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 blah. For me, it is an it's an athletic opera, and it is athletic. You swing that damn club as many times. You know, I don't shoot 68 or anything. That means you've only swung the club 68 times, and 18 of those were just little putt strokes. Oh no! I'm out there heroically wailing the hell out of a golf ball 110 times in 18 holes. Okay, I mean, yeah, it's a sport, Spike. But it's the coolest thing is it's a sport that goes on in your brain.
Yeah, just like a lot of people don't like to admit it because it does involve technology, and as long as you're not to the extreme of not following society like NASCAR, you know, F1's a great example of racing being a more civilized sport, but of high technology and finding new and innovative ways of doing things. Yeah, there's a lot of sports people don't necessarily recognize as sports or don't want to lump in with sports
right.
For one reason or another.
Bowling.
Yeah.
But that's a heavy-ass little ball.
Yeah, they're not playing bumper bowling like most people did as kids where they filled up the gutters with a big inflatable toy. You know, bowling, my cousin was big on amateur, trying to break into the pros, and he couldn't quite do it. That's actually a harder professional sport to get into than people would think.
Yeah, by the same token, I guess I do have my snobbish moments because... there are people out there that enjoy, different strokes for different folks. I have never watched American Idol. I have never watched The Simple Life. I think I've caught Survivor Island a couple of times, and they just make me want to stick my hand in a meat grinder. I mean, it doesn't do it for me, so I recognize that. But I think what you're pointing to, Spike, is the ideological purity that is somehow demanded, that it's okay to be into rock gardening, but it's not okay to sit in the stands and yell for your alma mater like you're coming out of your skin.
Yeah,
but it is.
Or for that matter too. You know, I don't dig wearing Birkenstocks. I don't own a Volvo. You know, not everyone who's going to be on the left is going to fit the same exact picture. You know, I mean.
Well, absolutely, and I think we also have to break those stereotypes as well.
Yeah,
you know, I get sick to death of hearing the Limbalonis talk about limousine liberals.
Yeah.
It's act as though by virtue of being conservatives or Republicans or what the hell ever they are, that theirs is the sole province of talking about things that are guy on the street American.
Yeah, well, Bono was given a speech at a college graduation, I think Columbia, a very extremely prestigious school. I saw it on C-SPAN a few years ago, and he busted out the quote, "The Clash wore combat boots, not Birkenstock." And I always just loved that line because, you know, we've become seen as, you know, the Petrulli and Birkenstocks crowd. You know, anyone who supports a non-democratic progressive opponent usually gets lumped in with the one or two people with body piercings that show up at an event, you know, and it's this stereotype. You know, my father, I believe, has never voted for a Republican for president, and he's a union construction worker. You know, I know someone who was the former head of the Lehigh Valley Teamsters. He was a truck driver, you know.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't your white-collar progressives, and it's that's the problem, is the party's, you know, become, it's allowed itself, and the movement has allowed itself to be seen as the white-collar movement, and
you're so right.
Important crowd behind.
You're so right, because I remember, and this one stirred up a real hornet's nest, too. I remember a conversation we had, probably over a year ago now, with a woman very, very firm in her convictions, very liberal, very progressive, who sat and explained to me on the air that... the problem was that we couldn't reach the masses because, what was it? Liberals didn't go to school, or liberals didn't go to college, or God, I think I've blocked out part of it, Spike, because it just made me want to. I just wanted to bang my head into the microphone. It was so, and people called in that evening and said, you know, this is indicative, so indicative of what's wrong with our side of things. You know, by God, we go to football games, us liberals, and we play in our softball leagues, and we do all kinds of things that don't involve Chablis or Brie or Volvos, jets or limousines.
Heck, for that matter, I have a friend who does a once a week he does a sports radio show, and he also does a video game review show. And he is one of the most liberal people out there I know. I mean, talking politics to him, yeah, he even filled in once for some national show, and he was on the air. And he's extremely progressive. I mean, he does a sports show, you know, where he, and he does overnight, but he's busy talking to truck drivers and this guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've allowed a certain select group to kind of run away with the show, and they're not the right group. And the same has happened to the right in this country. They've let a certain group run away at the show. Lincoln Chafee last night on the Daily Show.
Oh, wasn't he brilliant?
Yeah, I mean, he more or less came on and said, yeah, well, my party's being run by Southern morons, and there's nothing I can do about it anymore.
I felt kind of bad. For, I mean, I've, no, not kind of. I felt, and when what we're talking about here, Spike and I, is the appearance by Lincoln Chafee on the Daily Show last night, I felt bad for Lincoln Chafee because I have long thought that he was probably a pretty decent human being. But he, you know, he got hung out to dry by his own party, and he sat there talking to Jon Stewart, and he said, look at, you know, it was blind obedience, and I kept saying, you know, guys, what are we doing? and you know, we're following the president. That's what we're doing, following the president. You know, counting cards, definitely counting cards. It was the Rain Man approach to politics, for the love of God. But by the same token, Spike, while my heart sort of bled for Lincoln Chafee, I also remembered the times that he had to, had an opportunity to stand up and do the right thing, and he didn't.
Well, I think that's the rule by fear. I think McCain's another great example. He'll start to speak out, and suddenly he gets squelched and gets in line. And because I truly believe behind the scenes they do more than just arm twist into some of these people. I mean, Arlen Specter also, you know, another one who'll come out guns fire and criticizing them, and all of a sudden he's as cold as ice. And I honestly think it's a lot of bullying going on. I think to the advantage for at least Specter, at least now he doesn't have Rick Santorum as his fellow senator, so at least he has someone who would actually back him from his own state.
Yeah, and
the administration finally.
And of course, the other side of that is that he is now no longer the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I did like, you know, I liked Patrick Leahy's remarks last week that George Bush shouldn't be scared, he should be daggum terrified.
Well, you know, I saw a movie yesterday. It was a good movie, considering I only have a vague understanding of the subject matter, and it seemed to be a kind of an accurate movie. It was a movie made, I guess, in the mid-60s, maybe late-60s, about Che Guevara. And Jack Palance played Castro in that movie. I'm not sure if...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's old. And believe it or not, it was kind of interesting. The movie portrayed Castro as being more level-headed, and Guerrero was the out-of-control maniac and psychotic. It almost bordered on painting Castro in a good light. And what I found interesting is when Guerrero went down to Bolivia, he had the stay-the-course mentality. He had the we're-going-to-win mentality when even Castro was shaking his head saying he has no chance of winning. He's going to be destroyed. And that's now with the neocons are the Che Guevaras. We need a graphic artist to do George W. Bush as that Che Guevara figure.
With the hair and the beret?
Yeah, because that's exactly what the neocons have become. They have become Guerrera and his Cuban guerrillas in Bolivia. And unfortunately, we just have to change the word Bolivia to Iraq. And that's exactly the situation we're in. It's only a matter of time before defeat occurs. For the simple fact that we're just outnumbered.
Well, you know, you're the first person who's really brought that up, Spike. But there's truth in what you say, because a lot of the so-called neocons and the PNACers started life, or at least some of them did, as hardcore liberals.
And they have many similarities between them and communism. I'm convinced the Department of Homeland Security is a Soviet-style program. That is something Moscow during Joseph Stalin would have come up with. And I mean, even the name kind of gives you a communist kind of feeling of, quote, protection. This is where I sound like I stand in deep right field when I talk about this, but I honestly believe that the Communist Party won, and they are in power under the label of GOP in this country.
Well, there's a lot of similarities. We've got a vice president now who is seen roughly as often as Yuri Andropov was,
or as Fidel Castro is these days.
Yeah,
is he alive? Is he dead? We have the same thing with Dick Cheney. Yeah, unfortunately, no one dances in the streets of Miami when Cheney has a heart attack.
No, and anybody who said Congresswoman Ross Layton, who came out and said, you know, I just wish somebody'd go and assassinate Fidel Castro. You know, she was caught on tape, and she, oh, no, they photoshopped that audio of me. I never really said, I wouldn't feel bad if he died or anything, but
that's,
I don't want.
That's almost like they spread the tape up of me. I didn't really move that fast, and Keith Olbermann played it against it. Gee, isn't that amazing? The mouth moves right to the words.
Exactly, but these people are like that, and they've got a very Soviet flavor to them.
And they are red. They believe, you know, we're from red states. You know, the Soviets were red too.
Yeah,
you know, the similarities just are almost endless between these two groups, and for that matter, the Soviets basically rigged elections and destroyed democracy. And take a look here. It seems to be the same thing. It's scary when Patrick Buchanan has seriously become the voice of reason from the conservatives. I mean, at one time we used to think he was a nut. Now he actually, I look at him and wish he would have won the election 6 years ago.
Well, I watch Patrick Buchanan. I'm still convinced that he's crazier than a run-over dog. He's right for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
It's
just a shame that he...
Yeah, he's right that we shouldn't have gone into Iraq, but it's not that we shouldn't have gone into Iraq because of... I know there are people out there that say, oh, it's all Israel. Now, you know what? There's stupid. It is possible to be incredibly stupid without AIPAC having to be involved in it.
Yeah, well, my beef with Israel doesn't so much come with Iraq as much as with Lebanon. And by the way, if anyone gets a chance, that new... issue that of Time, that December 18th issue with the white desk and the apple on it, looks almost like the old Mac ad. It's basically a photo issue. If you get to somewhere in the center where they're doing the two-page spreads of pictures, there's a picture of a street of rubble in Lebanon this year. Just think of 9/11 and how apeshit these people in this country went from the damage combined in three different regions. This street alone probably has more buildings just blown up and destroyed than 9/11.
But see, we're allowed to have that kind of anger. The rest of the world isn't, Spike. You know,
and that was exactly the point I was going to get to. Is, you know, it's amazing. You know, we have one horrific day. You know, 3,000 people, and we think we can go on decades long wars. Or some people in this country feel we can go on decades long wars. Lebanon got bombed for weeks.
Well, sometimes, you know, sometimes
thousands and they can't do anything.
Oh, no. They're crazy. They're crazy terrorist influenced Arab speaking Muslims, and they're dangerous. But, you know, on the other hand, we lose a building, we lose 3,000 people, and we've got the right to go to Iraq, people who had absolutely nothing to do with a damn part of it. But we can go to Iraq and slaughter 750,000 people for the, you know. For the what? For the hell of it? For the fun of it? Every now and then I run across things in this program, Spike, that impact me for a day or two, and I'm still reeling from that article by Dar Jamal that I covered on the air last night. The new saying in Iraq is, today is better than tomorrow.
That would seem about right. There's a picture in Time, too, that shows a family that they say in the caption, doesn't leave their home in Baghdad for weeks at a time for fear of going out in the street, and shows them gathered around the window to look out because some car bomb just went off and they want to look out the window to see this. I mean, and just imagine if Americans had to live in that type of true fear, not fear being pumped to them artificially by their government.
No, but the real bone crushing stuff.
It's just nauseating.
Well, I fear, Spike, that we would be like the children of Israel in the middle of Sinai, crying out that, you know, at least we weren't hungry in Egypt.
Yeah. Well, all I know is, as bad as things are, I don't think they can get much worse because George Guerrero's Emmanuel Pinheiro, a.k.a. Don Rumsfeld, is no longer in charge. And I think at least as incompetent as the next stooge they're going to prop up in there could be, that at least we have solved one slight problem, which is we got rid of someone who just blindly would never believe he screwed up.
Well, I wish I could jump on board that train with you there, Spike, but
I've come to the conclusion that where the Bush administration is concerned, we're dealing with something no less than the modern manifestation of the ancient Greek Hydra. We lop off one head and we get two in its place.
Well, my only thought there is simply whoever takes over knows that there's problems. I think Rumsfeld was just getting such a PR tour when he would go to Iraq that he never had a clue of what was going on. He was totally clueless. He didn't speak to anyone from the Pentagon. You know, I've heard numerous times Murtha was the one talking to everyone from the Pentagon and not Donald Rumsfeld, which is just...
Yeah, who had an office there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all he had to do was walk down the hallway. Murtha had to take a car ride to go there. You know, and it just, it boggles. I truly won't feel happy about things going smoothly there unless we get someone who is a competent individual when it comes to warfare and, for that matter, governing and diplomacy. You know, I mean, people think I'm crazy when I say it over and over and over, but I honestly think Jesse Ventura would actually be a good Secretary of Defense in these times, because at least he understands withdrawing from a debacle, essentially.
Well, Jesse Ventura had been in the daggum fight.
Yeah, well, he voluntarily joined the Navy to go to Vietnam, unlike certain members of this administration who found ways out of going.
And, you know, Rumsfeld was another one of those 40,000 feet heroes.
Yeah.
I mean, Rumsfeld, of all the people in the Bush administration, Rumsfeld served. He was a Navy pilot.
Yeah.
And he just killed things from really high up.
No, like the president's father, the, quote, war hero who... from what I heard from many people, bailed and left his
right. Well, you know, even
behind.
Even if he behaved heroically in the case of the crash of his plane, it's got to be remembered he was flying a torpedo bomber, but he was flying a torpedo bomber that was loaded with cameras and film. They wouldn't turn him loose with things that actually went boom. These are Bushes we're talking about, Spike.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, they're not competent.
Yeah, well, I'm just wondering who was the person that really landed that plane for W on the aircraft carrier 3 years ago. And I'll never forget, on a Pearl Jam message board, all these war supporters carrying on saying, "See, you guys were wrong. See, we won. The president said it's over. We won." That was a long time ago that people were on the right were boasting that.
Yeah, head back to that Pearl Jam board. Those dudes are gone.
Oh, yeah, I think they were literally paid, because they were a lot of people that were literally making one or two posts ripping anyone against the war and vanishing. The worst was the ultra-libertarians who were regulars there that were supporting it back then, who I hope have come to their senses by now, because that was, the biggest problem then was that a lot of libertarians jumped aboard because it was a way of making money on oil.
Oh, yeah, and you know, and free marketeers.
Yeah, and that's why I could never be a libertarian. I just can't. They're such yes men. You know, so long as they can smoke their weed and knock up women and get them to have abortions, they...
Right, and
yeah,
and
I don't like Buchanan when I say that, but
speculate in the free market,
yeah,
the so-called free market, the market that's anything but free. You know, you see this stuff all the time, and it's more and more so as the number of people supporting Georgia's war decline. You know, as of yesterday, the approval of the war is 27%, Spike.
No, that's about right. There was 30% who blindly voted for Sherwood, Santorum, and Lynn Swan in this state. It was confusing. There was too many S's running for the Republicans here and that.
Yeah, and don't forget Kurt Weldon.
Yeah, but see, they were easier. They weren't the S's. I'm trying to remember.
Oh, yeah. Sherwood. Sherwood Schwartz. No, he did the, Brady Bunch.
But, and they all had about 30, 31%. So I think at this point what we're finding is the people who their candidate could sodomize a pack of Girl Scouts in front of the White House, and they'll blindly vote for him because he's the Republican. He just kind of like what's-his-face down in Florida, winning the election. The pedophile.
Oh, Charlie Crist?
Or Mark Foley.
Oh, Mark Foley, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's real easy to start forgetting which Republican pedophile I'm talking about.
Oh, I know, I've got a new one in the stack tonight.
Here we go. You know, over and over. I'll end on this note. It's amazing, the party of the prudes always seems to have the freakiest mother effers you can find. But
yeah.
On that note, I'm out of here.
All right, Spike, you take it easy, brother. Later. Yeah, the Republicans do get their freak on, don't they? Yeah, no, I got two in the stack this evening, not just one. Excuse me? And I've also this
Well, let's... No, I'm not going to babble yet. Our good friend David from Maine is waiting with us. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Sorry you had to wait so long.
No, that's all right, Bob. It's a pleasure.
How are you this evening?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'll say something sports-related, even though I don't follow it. The Heisman Trophy wasn't allowed on the airplane. They couldn't take it back. How stupid is that?
Huh?
Yeah.
I missed that.
Yeah, you know, that right there, I mean, maybe they thought Muhammad al-Sadr was hiding in it. I don't know.
Really little terrorist. In a stupid football pose.
Well, you know, I mean, we believe in elves and reindeer in some ways.
Yeah.
You know, for people complaining about the sports thing, I want people should understand one thing. That to a lot of people, war is the ultimate sport. And it's always going to be that way. And a lot of people, they fantasize about it because they're not there. And when you bring a sports analogy to it, and you start to bring the realistic details of what this sport is involved in, and the casualties and the damage that is caused I'm going to call it a sport like this, because basically this is extreme sports.
Well, it's certainly the way that's viewed, that it's viewed on the right.
You know, if I guarantee you, in a right wing paradise, they would like to see a graphic of computerized two soldier helmets cross the screen, crash into each other.
Yeah.
There it is. That is a paradise for it, and you have to understand.
You could get Hank Williams Jr. out there singing, "Are you ready for invasion?"
And you have to understand why people are so. I'm gonna explain to the left. I'll be like the mouthpiece of why people care about sports so much in this detail. People, it's nothing more simple than reliving your youth when you had the time for that recreation. For guys, I'm really telling you, it's on that subconscious level. And I'm sorry if people don't understand that, but you gotta understand, when people work hours and hours and hours a day, and they think back to what they have. I mean, if this wasn't there, I mean, we'd have so many axe murders in the streets. I'm sorry, people.
Well, and look, you know, you said they'd like to have the crashing helmets.
Right.
Watch any news network, David.
Oh.
You know, they've got that. What sticks in my mind the most is probably the CNN bumper music for Katrina.
Do
you remember that? That sort of rumbling minor key, boom, boom,
yeah.
Boom, boom, and damn, you know, it's a game to some of these people.
You know, Joe Scarborough reminds me of that substitute teacher that you just saw once in your school, and you're like, how the hell did he get in? I mean, you know, the sports thing, it's real simple to explain.
Well, we've got the Iraq Study Group report out now, and you still got George Bush coming out of a thing and talking about winning. I mean, at what point does the English language cease having validity within the terms of debate? Let's just pass one of those rules that we throw out there from time to time.
Right.
No more talking about Iraq and using win or lose. You know, and I'll sacrifice the word lose, okay, because I believe we lost the war the minute that we started it.
Oh, well, I believe that too.
But as long as...
I think, again, the sports analogy, it works in a sports team, but if there is no goal, I think most wars... It's like, it's a cliche, but nobody wins. But still, you know, I guess it was entertaining for some people to basically vicariously live through these players on the field. And it's, you know what it is? It's the workings of the mind. It's what they think goes on the field. Oh, this is what happens. And you know what makes it worse, Bob? I'll tell you what makes it worse. When you have those Army commercials, and then you have the video games like SOCOM, you get the helmets. And
you got Marines out there fighting dragons?
Right. You get the Marines fighting dragons? Exactly. People don't understand this. I go on USAA, okay, because my family, they come from, my dad's a veteran, okay, and even my dad realizes this. You go on the website, and you wouldn't see this, like, I don't know, 8 years ago, but you see a picture of a pilot coming out of an airplane, and there's a sunset. it's gotten to a level where we are at that level of George Orwell type advertising or Blade Runner type advertising on a freaking USA website where you don't need this kind of advertising. You already know, but I think they subconsciously I don't think a lot of people don't even realize that this is how much they drank the Kool-Aid. We're gonna see that sunset when he comes out of the plane. He's coming home, baby.
Well, look how adored. You remember the Marlboro Man from Fallujah?
Right.
The right wing got downright girlish and quivery. And I mean no disrespect to the ladies in the audience. You know what I mean.
Right.
I mean we're talking about the way that the little girls my age were way back when about Donny Osmond. The right wing got that way about the Marlboro Man picture, and they love the image, but he's gone, David. And it turns out that dude is absolutely got his brain eat up with PTSD.
Oh, and he was not for this war. You know, it's funny how that picture disappeared off the Drudge website. You know, this whole thing with the Iraq study group. I want to say a comment that I reached out to the Tony Snow White House briefing, Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
Victoria Jones said something, and I think it's important for people to hear it, even if it's not accurate on the quote. He said that Bush said, after listening to all these people in the Iraq study group, he said, "By the time they get this right, I'll be dead."
Caught that one.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that out of the same school of thought where they asked him what he thought history would think of it, and he said, when history says anything about it, we'll all be dead.
Yeah, it's basically from the same. I mean, you know, there isn't that much. Look, I mean, no, I don't know what the White House thinks, but I think that for the president to do radio addresses, it's better. I think TV has probably damaged a lot of his perception because he can definitely not say what is filtered or ran through a microphone in the back of his jacket. He still looks like he's totally out of it.
Yeah, he does. The smart-ass answer about things are bad. Is that good enough for you?
Right, exactly. Everyone...
He's detached from reality, and beyond that, he's really mean about it.
You know, I think a good term for this communist administration, I would call it the bubble wrap administration. They wrap themselves in so much bubble wrap. Then when they come to these other countries and they get these press conferences, like, why are these people so rude to us? Oh my God! You know?
Yeah, if that was an American journalist, they'd have him in Guantanamo before he could say, you know, meet the press.
I mean, you know, when Bush's, I mean, that was so sad when Bush's when Bush's father came out and he cried and he pretended it was for Jeb. Don't pretend it was for Jeb. Pretend it. Come to terms. I mean, come to terms and realize that he's crying because he's not going to listen to the Iraq study group.
That boy has been a screw-up all my life. He's been screwing up since the day he was born. He's going to screw up till I'm going to be dead, and he's going to still be screwing up.
You know, Sam Steeder does something in the morning every day when Bush does a folly. He plays the Godfather when Franco's going, "I'm smart! I'm smart, too!"
Oh, God.
He's like, "I'm not dumb, I'm smart!" He just keeps hitting that button.
Oh, yeah, George W. Bush, America's answer to Fredo.
Yeah, but, I mean, basically, it's a good analogy.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, because, remember, you know, there's examples of Fredo all over the places. If nobody saw the debate, the first debate, it's all almost forgotten. But when a historian comes back, they're going to see these little things and go, "Oh, my God, look at how Bush is looking." When he says Osama, he mutters in the mic, I know that about Osama. I know that."
I'd forgotten that.
I know
that. You're not getting nothing past me.
Or the moments when he gets up, or the moments where he gets up, he goes, "I got a timber company. You want some
wood?"
Yeah,
you want some wood.
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, the whole...
No, it's laughable, but behind all the comedy, David... And it's something that we've got to keep sight of. Behind all the comedy lies a very, very dangerous man.
Well, you know, the sad thing is that a lot of psychos and a lot of sick people, and you can look through it through history and in our pop culture, we make them to be clowns and comedians and say funny lines.
Well, we had the story, what, a week and a half ago, the study on that was performed on schizophrenics and
yeah.
people who were profoundly mentally ill. Not making fun of anybody here, David, but they did a survey, and by a huge majority, you ask the people who are most checked out from reality, and almost to a man, they're, George Bush is my guy. And you know, there was some sound science behind it, and part of that sound science was the fact that these people were looking for stability, and these the Republicans promise it, but it turns out to be as much a chimera as any other fairy tale.
It's in their eyes. You can look at it, and it's like shimmering, like saying, "Can you please buy this? Have I hit it yet? Can you please buy this?" It's in O'Reilly's eyes. It's in Glenn Beck's eyes. It's in everyone's eyes. They don't. Like I said, you know, Lionel made a good point. He said the conservative radio is going the way of the dinosaur. And it's, you know, if people saw the scenes behind there, I'm telling you, there's no way to recover from something like this, because people are changing and evolving so fast in a hyper-accelerated world we're living in, that the conservative, it's like we said before, that the conservative and liberal paradigms don't exist anymore. It's all deteriorating, people.
Well, liberal, first of all,
yeah.
Liberal, as most people understand it in the 21st century United States, was never something that we applied to ourselves. It was a straw man that was built by Lee Atwater and his predecessors going back to Reagan. And it was a straw man that was everything that a conservative deemed wrong with America.
Yeah.
If you made a decent wage because you were a member of a union, well, you know, you were liberal, and it was the
right.
liberal labor unions that were going to tear down a bunch of horse hockey, just a bunch of patent, unabashed BS lies. And, by the time you get to George W. Bush's campaign against Michael Dukakis, it was liberal Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis who turned Willie Horton loose, who went out and raped and killed. And you let that liberal become president, and none of our white women will be safe from the black folk. And that was the way it was played. And that definition of liberal... has never belonged to us. It's never been accurate. It's never been true. And yet this is our side of the fight's fault. We let it stick to us.
You know, Bob, if you look at it, I don't care what the definition of liberal is to a lot of people in the country. I understand that. But if you really look at it, this administration is the most liberal in the world. They invade a country preemptively. They drop $400 billion. In an Arab stance, they don't know what they're doing, they don't have any plan, and yet they still have the gall, Bob. They still have the gall to say, well, it's that liberal tax and spend. What the hell are you talking about?
Oh, I know, and it's not us.
I know, that's the point. I mean, I think, for my definition, for somebody to be liberal, it's more radical than that. I think... when they feel something, when they're threatened by something, or when they feel something inside is morally right, or they know it's kind of wrong, but they want to risk it and gamble it, to me, that's being really liberal. And to me, I don't look at myself as liberal. I don't know. I just look at myself. I assess the situation. I say, let me look at the numbers here. No, I'm not going to go into the Arab stands where a bunch of people...
I'm not going to drop $400 billion worth of bombs on a sandbox.
And you know, Bob, if I was the Iraq study group, I would just hit the microphone and I would say, basically, we've created the new blood in the Crips.
Yeah, you mean the Shia and the Sunni?
Right, the Shia and the Sunni, exactly. And, you know, there's not much to say about it. I mean, and there's not much you can do about it. I mean, everyone says that the situation is stark, and they're right.
But by the same token, there is real liberalism that is worth being proud of, David.
Oh, without a doubt. But, I mean, again, it's when words are co-opted, you know?
And it's when people let it happen. I mean, I've got a list of people that deserve to have their asses kicked, and a bunch of them are not Republicans. Michael Dukakis, John Kerry.
Right, John Kerry.
To a certain extent, Al Gore for listening to them, and the people who advised Al Gore away from being himself in the 2000 campaign.
You know, look how the right wing protected Don Imus this week. Did you notice that?
No.
He said CBS is run by a bunch of Jews.
No.
Yes.
Oh God, I'm out of the loop. I'm ashamed now. I can't believe I missed that.
And my point is this: is
CBS
this
like, is run by a bunch of Jews.
He said something like that. Something close to that. But the point is Don Imus can say that because his shock value on the NASDAQ of shock is up there. But can somebody like George Soros say that? Or can I'm trying to think of an example here. Michael Moore? Michael Moore say that?
No. Oh, no. Of course, you know, Imus was just trying to get free tickets to Apocalypso.
Right. He was trying to get free tickets to Apocalypto.
Oh, I got a million of them. I'll be here all week.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You know, Bob, when you look at the bigger picture of things, the situations that are deteriorating around the world, it's because everyone in our administration is really, really stubborn in what their view is, and they believe that they're going to get something out of this. And they don't even realize that it's just a hollow. It's going to be a hollow victory in the end.
Well, you know, David. Yeah, hollow.
I mean,
it reminds me. Your mention of that reminds me of. I've gone from sports to being in the artsy fartsy type. There is a T.S. Eliot poem.
Right.
Called We Are the Hollow Men. And if you go back and you read it, and it's been a while since I have, but if you go back and read it, I think you can find yourself some Bolsheviks in there. T.S. Eliot, The Hollow Men.
I'll check that out. Before I leave, I just want to say, some people say that the impeachment of Bush is going to, that needs to happen. Well, even if it doesn't happen, I just want people to keep this in mind. He's got like a polyphonic voice system in his head for the rest of his life. And they're going to, and make no mistake about it, they're going to be arguing about, George, you're a failure. That war was right. No, it was wrong, George.
Yeah, and the thing is, this does not require a transmitter.
Right, and he's going to be in his bedroom looking out the window, and he's going to think about it for the rest of his life.
Well, okay, you've just taken me to another place, David. Damn, you're good at this. It's gonna be Babs's voice, and it's gonna be Pappy Bush's voice,
right?
And ultimately, I think where you're going is the vision of a post presidential George W. Bush as Norman Bates.
Norman, you failure.
Yes, Mother.
I'm telling you, if we don't get him for this, if we don't punish him and we don't incriminate him, believe me, there's no escaping that. Even when you're crazy, doesn't matter. It doesn't mean you're not tortured. You won't be tortured. Believe me, you would be tortured. I would be willing to bet that Pinochet and the Darfur dictator and all of these other dictators. I mean, there's going to always be that other voice in their head that says, wow, what we did is wrong. What we did is...
Yeah.
Unless they're totally just, you know, Satan.
Satanic.
Forget about what I said.
Well, no, and that's the thing. You know, we've had a conversation on this program with our good friend Rick Goodner, the psychologist, who has pointed out the fact that George Bush is a sociopath. So the one thing that militates against the things that you've set forward, David, is the fact that if it was you or if it was me...
Right,
that polyphonic dialogue would be taking place, and we don't have to be insane for it to happen. But what you're dealing with in George Bush and the Rumsfelds and the Cheneys of the world are people who are diagnosable, should be medicated sociopaths. And sociopaths don't have that inner monologue, because that inner monologue, when you get right down to it, is the sound a conscience makes.
I believe that I believe that what it all comes down to is they all think that humanity is out to get them.
Well, paranoia often goes hand in hand with sociopathy.
And, you know, there's only so much you can do to treat that, and I think the real good treatment is to get everyone out of office, remove them. If by force, I mean, I would go for a citizen's arrest.
Well, you know, that's the one thing we've never seen in this country. We have never seen a president impeached and taken from office. And we don't know what would happen if, who was it? Somebody will straighten me up real quick. There was a line about, you know, how many divisions does the Pope control?
Right.
Well, the same thing could be said of a president being removed, and I could easily see it coming out of the Bush White House. You know, how many, the Senate issues an order commanding the removal of George Bush from office, and Bush responds by saying, how many divisions does the Senate control? And then you have a real, live, honest-to-Jesus constitutional crisis, and not one of these fake constitutional crises of, we can't talk bad about dear leader, we just got to wait till he's gone. You know, no, that would be the real deal. And we have never, and we have managed to be successful in this country in never coming to that pass. Richard Nixon didn't force that hand. Richard Nixon stepped down because Richard Nixon feared prison more than Richard Nixon feared disgrace. Bill Clinton, it didn't get that far because Bill Clinton stared him in the eye and said, "Do it, you punks," and gave him the Clint Eastwood treatment. And in the end, it didn't come to it. But the thing is, if I don't know, maybe this is one of the things that wanders around inside of the skulls of people who talk about how impeachment's off the table. Maybe they're afraid of what would happen if they actually forced George Bush's hand.
I think when you're a lot in a situation like people like Bill Kristol, and I look at him and I go, I feel sorry for you, and at the same time I loathe you, but. I mean, I understand that his father was probably drilling him every day of his life, going, "What do you mean you don't understand? Let me explain to you, son, how the world works."
One more time. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. It's this deliberate programming, and it doesn't matter if it's right, because this is the path we chose, and by gosh, this is the path we're going to stay on.
Yeah, for good or ill, right or wrong, we're looking for a new way forward. You know, somebody needs to explain to George Bush that there's no way forward. The way is back. But he is scared to death to contemplate the idea of retreat, when in fact a good general knows that sometimes retreat is the best thing that you can do in order to live to fight another day.
You know, to me, the neoconservative movement is almost like a skinhead or a stormtrooper club if they had them in college or something.
Yeah.
They allowed that in college. I mean, it's just so ridiculous on the face of it. It's like, so what you're saying is you can transform areas. What if someone wants to transform your area? Oh, no, that can't happen.
That's un-American.
Right, that can't happen because that is the evil side. That's where they go.
Yeah.
And, you know, it goes back to Power of Nightmares, where they said Leo Strauss was addicted to Gunsmoke. So there we are.
Sheriff Dillon. Oh, Jesus. David, thanks so much. Have a good night, all right?
No problem, Bob. Before I go, I just wanted to ask, did that file work or not?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Oh, God. Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm glad you like it. I hope you pass it on.
I'm going to sit back and watch it again because
I mean, the visuals are just, you know, for anyone just listening, we're talking.
Oh, I sat here watching it with all the lights off in the studio.
Oh, you know, for anyone listening, the Fountains, Darren Aronofsky's, when it comes out on DVD, you guys should watch it because it applies to every single human being on this world, even Paul Wolfowitz.
Even Paul Wolfowitz. Thanks,
Paul
David.
Wolfowitz. All right, ladies.
Take care. Bye now. All right, we'll come back here in a couple of minutes. I want to share something with you. David got me thinking about it. Maybe you've already looked it up. See if this applies. I know, poetry. 1925. And yes, T.S. Eliot was a noted anti-Semite and a noted rotten human being in a lot of different ways. We, just get a picture in your head of Cheney or Rumsfeld or Pearl or Wolfowitz or Edelman or any of these monsters. And then also try to think a little bit about the people who have died for their hubris. We are the hollow men. We are the stuffed men, leaning together, headpiece filled with straw. Alas, our dried voices, when we whisper together, are quiet and meaningless as wind in dry grass, or rats' feet over broken glass in our dry cellar. Shape without form, shade without color, paralyzed force, gesture without motion, those who have crossed with direct eyes to death's other kingdom remember us, if at all, not as lost, violent souls, but only as the hollow men, the stuffed men. Eyes I dare not meet in dreams, in death's dream kingdom these do not appear. There the eyes are sunlight on a broken column. There is a tree swinging, and voices are in the winds singing, more distant and more solemn than a fading star. Let me be no nearer in death's dream kingdom. Let me also wear such deliberate disguises, rat's coat, crow skin, crossed staves in a field, behaving as the wind behaves. No nearer, not that final meeting in the twilight kingdom. This is the dead land. This is cactus land. Here the stone images are raised. Here they receive the supplication of a dead man's hand under the twinkle of a fading star. It is like this in death's other kingdom, waking alone at the hour when we are trembling with tenderness, lips that would kiss, form prayers to broken stone. The eyes are not here. There are no eyes here, in this valley of dying stars, in this hollow valley, this broken jaw of our lost kingdom. In this last of meeting places, we grope together and avoid speech, gathered on this beach of the tumid river, sightless unless the eyes reappear as the perpetual star, multifoliate rose of death's twilight kingdom, the hope only of empty men. Here we go round the prickly pear, prickly pear, prickly pear. Here we go round the prickly pear at 5 o'clock in the morning. Between the idea and the reality, between the motion and the act, falls the shadow, for thine is the kingdom. Between the conception and the creation, between the emotion and the response, falls the shadow. Life is very long. Between the desire and the spasm, between the potency and the existence, between the essence and the descent, falls the shadow. For thine is the kingdom. For thine is life, is for thine is the, this is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. Not with a bang, but a whimper. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
NFL tonight. So get ready. I mean, get ready. Are you ready for football on Monday Night Invasion?
This is the Quality News Network. The president announced today he was postponing his national address on his beleaguered Iraq policy. He promised to discuss his strategy before Christmas. He now says it won't be until sometime in January. 7 out of 10 Americans disapprove of how President Bush is handling the Iraq war. That's according to the latest ABC News Washington Post poll. 6 out of 10 say the Iraq war is not worth fighting. In the main square of central Baghdad, at least 70 people, mostly day laborers looking for work, were killed today by car bombs exploding nearly simultaneously. 200 people were wounded. In Mosul, an Associated Press cameraman was shot to death today. He is the third AP employee to be killed while covering the Iraq war. In Jerusalem, the Israeli Supreme Court today ruled that Palestinians could seek compensation from Israel for damages caused by the Israeli army. The court unanimously threw out a law preventing Palestinians from seeking such compensation. Interpol has now joined the investigation into the radiation poisoning death of Kremlin critic Alexander Litvinenko. The FBI, Scotland Yard, and German police are already involved. In Italy, anti-mafia police have arrested more than 100 people charged with international drug sales. Arrests have also been made in Europe and Latin America. In six states today, federal agents raided meat processing plants. An unknown number of illegal immigrants were arrested. Operations at all six plants of the Swift Company were temporarily suspended during the raids. The company has not yet been charged. In Los Angeles, 800,000 current and former students, faculty, and staff of the University of California were notified a campus computer had been hacked. Names and some personal information may have been exposed. It is considered one of the largest breaches of computer security at a higher education institution. In Washington today, the Bush administration asked an appeals court to overturn a federal judge's ruling that requires U.S. currency to be modified to assist the blind. The U.S. is one of the only nations on earth whose paper currency is all the same size. In Ohio, Republican lawmakers today overrode a Republican governor's veto of a gun control bill he said was too stringent and would knock out all local gun laws. It's the first time in almost three decades Ohio lawmakers have overturned a governor's veto. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, A Conversation with America, designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Two crew members of the Space Shuttle Discovery today are conducting the first of three scheduled spacewalks. The astronauts are to replace the space station's electrical system. In Beijing, air pollution is so bad people have been told to stay indoors. All of the city's monitoring stations are reporting particulates seven times higher than is safe. Scientists say it is the worst air pollution ever recorded in Beijing, which already has a reputation as being one of the most polluted in the world. Angola is expected to be named the next member of OPEC when it meets Thursday. Angola is the second biggest oil producer in sub-Saharan Africa. Federal Reserve policymakers held their last meeting of the year and decided to leave short-term interest rates unchanged at 5.25%. It was the fourth time in a row the Fed has left benchmark rates as is. The chairman of Hewlett-Packard says there is more cost-cutting ahead for the computer maker. The HP workforce has already been cut by 10%. Light sweet crude is trading at $60.91 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was down 13 points at 12,315. The NASDAQ down 11 at 2431. The S&P 500 down 1 at 1411. Gold ended trading at NYMEX at $634.10 an ounce. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
8.5 minutes after the hour. I think we're on to a good one tonight. And just okay. So we did sports. Let's do culture while we're at it. I had said at some point, and I repent myself of it, that I was halfway tempted to go and see Apocalypso. You realize it's Apocalypso. He just couldn't do that because people would be wandering around talking, making. Yeah, Jon Stewart would be on the Daily Show going, Maya, Maya, daylight come and we rip out the heart. Yeah, no, okay, stop, Bob. What a horrible, horrible movie. I've got two articles in front of me, one from the Tennessean, the Nashville Tennessean, in which a real live, honest-to-God, working archaeologist talks about what a piece of crap Apocalypto is, and another one from that was provided to me just a little bit ago by one of our folks in the chat room, one Oops by name. Oops provided me with this article. Apocalypto is an insult to Maya culture, one expert says. A history professor explains where Mel Gibson got it very, very wrong, not the least of which is the fact that this blasted movie is set in the 15th century or so, and at the end of the movie, the Spanish show up. Don't! One of the points that's made is that this film is dangerous because people are going to come out of it thinking that there's some sort of an expert about Maya culture when they've just been lied to. That this film is even less related to Maya culture than The Passion of the Christ was to the Levantine civilization around the time of Christ, the time of Yeshua. You know, come on, enough with the Greek. The time of Yeshua. Because High Maya civilization, if I recall my reading correctly, had ended no later than 1100 A.D. You don't get Hernan Cortes and his gang of murdering, marauding, disease-spreading, syphilitic sons of bitches until 1521? Something like that. So, if you, like I, harbored any temptation to go and see that god-awful piece of garbage, I tell you what, whatever you would spend going to Apocalypto, Jesus, it sounds like a cough drop. Hey, that cough sounds pretty bad there, Agnes. How about an Apocalypto made with real Apocalypto leaves? Oh, God. Take that money and do something for a worthy cause with it. Hell, send it to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. God knows he needs the help. Do something right with it. For the love of God, please don't put any money in Mel Gibson's pocket. Crazy bastard. Don Imus. CBS is owned by the Jews. Yeah, and he goes and gets his mail the next day. Yeah, dear Don, here's two tickets to Apocalypto. Love, Mel. Oh! Let's talk to our good friend Phil down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Thanks, Bob. Good to hear you, too. I want to remind people that the military take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And when people say they're fighting for our freedom by defending the Constitution, which defines our freedoms and supposedly is there to protect them, that's what it really means, not doing whatever this outrageous civilian leadership dictates that it does, you know. And you want to support the troops, you want to honor the dead, then demand that these elected representatives of the people adhere to this Constitution. And if you take any number of the Bush administration's examples of high crimes and misdemeanors, you pick any number of them, we have to impeach these guys.
That's the thing that I keep coming back to, is that this is not an act of choice. This is an act of this is a required act if constitutional oaths of office are to have any meaning whatsoever.
And that's what, you know, fighting for our freedoms, I think a lot of people don't know what that means. The oath that a soldier, an airman, or anybody in the military takes is not to any person, not to any president, not to any political party. It specifically says the oath is to support and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And, you know, and people, you know what, Bob? We the people are responsible. And so their blood ultimately is on we the people's hands, Bob.
Well, there's one other thing, Phil, and I think it's somewhere you're ultimately going to.
Mm.
I'm a little bit, and this is not gooning on the military, okay? I don't want it to be deemed that by any in any fashion. But I'm a little bit tired of being told that anywhere we send our military to kill brown people, that somebody's fighting for my freedom, because that's a bunch of crap.
It's perverted. And I think as a people, we've got to say bullshit. Oh, wait a minute.
No, that's okay. I mean, no.
Know,
you can.
Know, we got to call people on, like Clinton. Remember Clinton got interviewed by that Fox News creep?
Yeah, Chris Wallace.
Yeah, and he tried to pull some BS like that, and Clinton immediately, basically, in effect, said, BS, bullshit. You know?
Yeah.
And that's what we as people have to start doing when somebody tries to lay that kind of trip on us. We got to call it right on the spot and say bullshit, you know. And we are responsible for doing that, Bob, because it, you know, the representatives in Congress.
Well, we got to give the representatives in Congress the spine to understand that we know what their oath is.
Well, beyond the spine. We got to demand it. You know, they work for us, and because they're corrupted and bought and paid for is no excuse. The end result is we the people are responsible for our representative government, and in that, if that's the case, then we're responsible for where that representative government sends our military. So in effect, we are responsible for these kids being sent into, you know, to go kill brown people and take their oil for the corporate thugs that hijacked our government. So no one's going to come and save us. Nancy Pelosi and Rahm Emanuel and the DNC don't give a GD about these kids. They're not their kids. They don't have any skin in the game. It's all about politics and cutting deals. And to think that because they won this election, this war is not going to go on for as long as it's politically convenient is naive.
Well, it is naive, and it's also, I think, equally naive to think. And this goes to a separate topic, but it sort of dovetails with what you're talking about, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
This talk, and I admire Charlie Rangel. Okay, Charlie Rangel is a veteran.
Yes.
Charlie Rangel
was decorated in the Korean War,
wounded, I believe.
Yes, he was.
But and I understand the thinking behind his call for a draft. But
oh,
you know
sure.
What? I don't give, Agnes and I do not give our children loaded handguns, and I am damn sure not going to be in favor of anything that gives George Bush any more kind of military presence than he already has.
Mm.
Because he's the kind of person who, given more, will use more. You know, what would we call that, Phil? It's addictive behavior, isn't it?
Give an inch, take a mile, whatever the heck that saying is.
And use.
But dig this, Bob. Charlie Rangel is a perfect example. What he did with the proposing the draft is exactly what I was just talking about. When somebody gives us bullshit, we need to call them on it and say bullshit. And that's what he's doing as far as proposing the draft. You know, he's saying, you guys want to wave the flag and support our troops and God bless America, then everybody should have a share in this sacrifice. he's calling them on their BS
and
by proposing that draft.
Well, I understand that.
It ain't going to pass.
I know it's not. I hope it doesn't, because the idea of you know, you don't give matches to pyromaniacs, and you don't give Bushes any more military might than they've already got.
Yeah.
And for that matter, let me be clear on something, because there's another side to this. We have people who have presidential ambitions who seem convinced that they have to be really, really hawkish in order to be taken seriously as a contender. And I don't want that person to have an expanded military either.
Correct. This whole daggone Congress needs to be flushed out of there. And so how do we do that? I do a lot of things down here. I go to the weekly Code Pink anti-war demonstration. We hand out flyers, and, you know, I do a lot of different things, you know, as much as I can, and I think as much as any, I do what any other American can do, should they choose to do, you know?
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is, how can I have more of enough, what can I do to get these kids the hell out of Iraq? They don't belong there one more day. 10 died the other day, I don't know, 5 today, whatever. Get them the hell out of there now. And, you know, the New York Times, a couple weeks ago in their editorial page, they basically framed the debate, stay the course or two-year phased withdrawal. Bullshit.
Yeah, neither one of those is acceptable.
And the thing is, the people have to know that the Democratic Party, the New York Times, the so-called liberal progressive media talking heads, they don't dictate to us what the choices are. It's about time the people started getting off their asses and participating in this freedom isn't free experiment here. If freedom isn't free, you got to get off your butt, you know,
and live it.
Yeah, man. And that me. So tonight I went to this Democratic Club meeting. I wanted to puke because, you know, I consider myself not a member of any party. I'm an American, damn it, and I want to think for myself and choose who I want to choose. But then I thought, what can I do? Can I have an effect? You know, we get in. People can join these Democratic clubs, and then you get in these clubs, and you got a voice. And then you can light more of a fire under the ass of these Democrats in Congress. And the reason why I say Democrats is because they're in the majority, and if they can take the vote to stop funding the war or whatever, you know, these are things that we can do. You know, so I got to, what's the word? You know, I got to pinch my nose and join something I don't want to join, but the reason why I'm doing it is because this can be a faster way of getting these kids home and putting these bastards in jail. Every one of them. The media, the Congress people that covered up these lies, those guys on the Senate Intelligence Committee that refused to investigate the lies, you know, what's his name, Pat Roberts?
The former Intelligence Committee chair?
Yeah, he...
The guy who couldn't be bothered to do his job, yeah.
There you go. And I say nothing less, man. Nothing less.
Well, you know, it's time to, where Pat Roberts is concerned, it's time to find, there it goes, Jay Rockefeller's email address and phone number and wear him out.
Yes, and so people, how can we best put the heat on these Congress people? You know, these Democrats that just got elected, you know, you think these click on the email to sign these email petitions or just phoning it? Yeah, they help, but it ain't enough. If you get into one of these actual Democratic clubs, you know, that these SOBs depend on, you know, to get support when the elections come around, we got to find ways where we have more of an impact on these
people. Well, you know, let me suggest a way, Phil, and I'm
yeah,
sure you're
I'm open to
you're,
it.
You're I'm sure no, I'm sure you're already ahead of the curve on this. I was inspired when I saw Dennis Kucinich speaking today saying that he by God would run for president again. I watched his remarks. I happened to be on MSNBC, and I can't remember her name. The anchor, the lady who occasionally fills in for Keith Olbermann, seems like a good enough sort. But she had Chris Saliza from the Washington Post on to explain it all to us. And he said, well, you know, of course, Dennis Kucinich does not have a chance, but by running for president, he gets a bully pulpit for what he has to say. Which, you know, to me sounds like, well, you know, just any old schmuck can run for president and everybody listens to him. We had to, people had to battle. And, you know, I was involved with Kucinich's campaign a little bit in 2004. And people had to battle to get somebody to write something about him besides, he's the bachelor who used to be the mayor of Cleveland who drove Cleveland into bankruptcy, you know, and all that happy crap. And but the fact of the matter is, he is running again. Get behind him. Get people behind him. Start talking him now, because he is going to take that bully pulpit, and he is going to talk peace, and he is the only one who will talk an end to the war, Phil.
Yes.
And the, you know, the other thing that Chris Saliza said was, well, you know, in the grand scheme of things, he really didn't, you know, he didn't impact or affect the campaign that much. That is a load of hogwash, because between Dennis Kucinich and Al Sharpton, they were the ones who were talking health care. They were the ones who were talking the evils of the war. If we can remember far back enough to the Democratic primary process of 2004, we might actually recall that you couldn't get John Kerry to say something about the war before Dennis Kucinich and Al Sharpton started talking about it. And you couldn't get anybody else to say anything about it either. But it was through the actions of Dennis Kucinich that it became an issue, and health care became an issue. And John Edwards rode the health care issue, and John Kerry finally started talking about the war, but unfortunately he had that little problem of having been for it before he was against it.
Yes.
So, you know, are there concrete things? Go to these meetings. You're absolutely right. Join your groups. Be part of the process. There's far more good that can be done than just talking about it. It's talking about it in front of people and with people where you can make a difference. And these groups that you're talking about are absolutely critical.
They're filled with sheep too, Bob.
Oh, absolutely.
We got to replace them.
Whether it's the war or virtually any other issue, I would challenge anybody within the reach of my voice to go to their next city council or county commission meeting and just see how many ordinary citizens are there besides the newspaper recorder and the reporter and the radio and TV guys. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you the room will be almost empty. If people who want an end to this war will start it in their city councils and their county commissions, and it's easy to do because there's never anything on the agenda, that is where it begins. You know, get in there and demand that the city council pass a resolution demanding that the troops be brought home now. It's happening all across the country. The more it happens, the more it will have an impact.
And there is for those who don't know about the afterdowningstreet.org website,
yes,
has all kinds of resources on it for doing these kind of local resolutions for both impeachment and bringing the troops home. But I want to ask you a question, Bob, about the media.
Sure.
You know, we had this discussion tonight at this Democratic Club meeting, you know, as us becoming the media ourselves versus, you know, lobbying the corporate media and having them throw us a bone every now and then. And my take is on it, yes, you want Dennis Kucinich to get the, and Sharpton, the guys that are real Democrats, stand for what the Democrats always stood for, to get press. But the same thing with this corporate media, my take is I don't want to feed it.
No, they're dead.
You know what I mean? I don't want to watch it. If I'm watching it, and then I'm feeding it.
Well, that's
a toss. How do you look at that?
Well, I don't watch much TV anymore. My guilty pleasures are, usually it's close to 1 o'clock by Eastern time before I'm going to bed. So I watch the rerun of or if I get there early enough, midnight, I watch Olbermann, I watch the rerun of The Daily Show, I watch the Colbert Report, you know, because I find it entertaining, and I am still a human creature who likes to be entertained.
Plus, you get the news from them.
Yeah, a little bit of it, yeah, you know, without a doubt. I haven't watched Network or Fox in so long, it's not. I can't calculate it.
But what I'm asking you, Bob, is let's say the goal here is to get someone like Kucinich, you know, media attention. Like you mentioned, people had to just work their rear ends off just to get them a little airtime the last time. My thing, you know, what I'm asking you is, should we invest our energies into trying to get the corporate media to throw us a bone, or should we become the media ourselves and
we're trying to do that. Yeah. We absolutely are. And you know, the more organizations like the Head On Radio Network and Nova M grow, the more opportunity that they have to have an impact. But we still feel there's no getting around it. Still got to get through to the people who have not seen, who have not heard truth in so long that it's going to sound absolutely, it's going to sound like the crash of big water when they do hear it. It's going to be deafening to them.
Mm.
And we've got to find a way to get that message to them. Well, I hope we can do it by growing the horn, and I hope Nova M can do it by growing on terrestrial radio. But at some point in time, yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea to
stop feeding this corporate. It's like a bully.
Well, stop feeding it, but also try to have some impact on it. If
that's what the debate was tonight.
Yeah, if Dennis is going to be, for instance, speaking in Daytona, I think you absolutely have to beat the door downs at local TV to get it covered.
Yes.
And be there and be ready on local radio talk to talk about it, because you know, for every wingnut that's going, oh, he bankrupted Cleveland, you know, there's going to be somebody else who says, you know, the guy's
got a plan for getting our kids out of
not just that. Dennis Kucinich is mainstream now. You know, oh, he's weird. He's one of those peaceniks. That's what we got in 2004. Well, you know what? Dennis Kucinich is a candidate who represents a majority point of view in America now.
Yes. And you know what? Another thing about Dennis Kucinich, I don't want to tie up the phone all night, but I saw him recently, and you can watch this online if you go to the democracynow.org website. He was on a week or two ago with former Senator George McGovern, and they were talking about, you know, what to do with getting the heck out of Iraq, and they had some right-wing nut on to counter from the American Enterprise Institute, you know, who also was of service age during Vietnam and didn't go. But anyway, he was the stay-the-course guy. But Kucinich had an attitude of anger. You know, like, this is BS, this is crap, you know, and we're not going to stand for it. Almost like the guy
from Network.
Network,
yeah.
Which, you know, is 30 years, the 30-year edition's out now, I think. But
oh, wow.
Great film. Anyway, if we as individuals display that same attitude of, hey, that's bullshit.
Yep.
I'm not going to... No, what do you mean phase withdrawal? F that. Home now, right? And if we can display that attitude in numbers and join up with Kucinich like that, you know, maybe we'll get these other representatives who are still, like, you know, want to say that but are worried about what they say politically. Well, look at that Republican senator from
Oregon
that just...
Gordon Smith.
It's about effing time. 4 years and God knows hundreds of thousands of lives lost. You know, but I guess that's a start. We should applaud him. But part of me wants to say, the hell weren't you saying that 4 years ago?
Right. And that's a dilemma those of us who were right about the war have to address within ourselves, Phil, because there's a big part of me that wants to look at the Gordon Smiths and listen, the John Murthas of the world.
Yes.
and say, you sorry bastard. You know, where were you when we needed you?
Oh, well, you know, Saddam is a grave and growing threat, jumping Jesus.
These
you know,
bastards knew it.
Sure.
They all knew. And that's why we should be angry, because they all knew.
But this is a place, Phil, where we have to act. You know, we're in a place. The Iraq war is at 27% now. That means that 73% of America now acknowledge that it's wrong now, it was wrong when we started, and it's time to end it. We have got to, you know, we really don't have time for recriminations against the Jack Murthas and the Gordon Smiths.
No,
if Gordon Smith is running for re-election in 2008, I want him beaten, okay? But I want him beaten for reasons beyond his support for the Iraq war. I got educated about Gordon Smith a couple of nights ago in a phone call, and the guy's a jackass. Okay? So he's got to go. But right now, for getting out of the war, we got to stand shoulder to shoulder with the people who want us out of the war, and we'll sort out who was the bigger fool after it's over by some sort of reconciliation method.
First things first, yes.
Yeah. And the first thing right now is that word now, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing less. Yeah, I've already been told tonight, Phil, that I am unreasonable and unrealistic for thinking that it is possible to start bringing our troops home. You know what? I know better. I know that with the lift of a phone and put it to the ear, and the presidential voice says to the Pentagon voice, start bringing them home. Start bringing them home now, and don't give me anything but yes, sir, and no excuses, sir, for an answer, and hang up the phone, that the C-130s and the C-5s and the helicopters and the trucks would start rolling, and we could get out of Iraq as quickly as we got into it.
Exactly. There's no reason. Just pull them the heck out of there. And anyone that says, oh, you're being unreasonable, that's the answer we should give them, Bob.
We'll never know if we're being unreasonable until we try.
Exactly. That's the answer we should give these people, that if they say, oh, that's unreasonable, what's going to happen? You know what, Bob? I don't give a damn what happens. Truthfully, get them the heck out of there and then figure out what's going to happen later. But get these kids the heck out of there.
Because again, and it's. I'm sorry. These are talking points. I guess they really are. I get accused of it from time to time, and I'll just own it. The number of soldiers that die between now and the time that we decide that it's time to end this thing, their blood is no longer on my hands. Their blood is not on your hands, Phil. Their blood is on the hands of the people who have said that most deadly of words, and that word is wait. Oh, Jesus. Phil, you got me all worked up. What are you trying to do here, buddy?
You know, Agnes let me in tonight. She knows what's up. Maybe she wanted to get you worked up. But, hey, Bob, you know, I know you've got to get other callers, but it's the 70% that are saying, you know, we're not for this thing, you know, that's the answer of a survey. We've got to do more than answer the poll.
Yeah. No. You got to find those people. You got to band those people together. You got to talk to them. You got to give them strength in numbers. You got to convince them that you will stand with them when some right-wing freak says, "Well, you don't support the troops," because it's about to, you know, that's 70% against a bunch of fundamentalist freakish 20% American. Pseudo-American weirdos. We got the numbers behind us now, so when they, oh, you don't support the truth, we can have two or three people to just look at him and say, sit down and shut up, freak.
Exactly, and that's what calling into shows like yours, where you provide a forum for us to have this conversation. Well, I don't know how many, you know, millions or whatever are listening right now, thousands, millions, whatever the heck the number is. There's people that are listening to you and I speak right now that aren't doing the things or have yet to do the things that we just discussed, you know, which is more than answering a poll, yes or no.
Yeah.
To do this. And you know, when we call people on it, we have to call our own people on it too. Family members, friends, radio listeners, you know, hey, good question. Maybe that would be a topic for a show one night, is what are you personally doing to bring these troops home? And you know, we might have, let's say we have that as a topic of a show one night, and we might come up with, by listening to people call in with what they're doing, there might be all kinds of ideas that some of us haven't thought of yet.
And make this the resource that we have planned it to be. Phil, I do have to roll along, but I tell you what, thank you so much. I enjoy our conversations immensely.
And thank you
for your efforts, man. I know that you're out there, and I know that you never quit.
Well,
and you serve as an example to others.
Well, it's easy, folks. Just do it.
Let's get all
do
Nike
something.
On them.
Thanks, Bob.
Later, Phil.
Okay,
bye
good night.
Now. I love that man's energy. I love his passion, and I love his commitment to saving lives. That's what it boils down to. It's saving lives. And, you know, these freaks want to wrap themselves in the flag and wave the bloody shirt. Ultimately, there's going to be a civil war in Iraq. This is about saving American lives. Is Mrs. Gutierrez's son worth it to you? How about Mrs. Willoughby's? How about Mr. Brannigan? Is his kid good enough for you to go out and bust your ass and try to end this war and wear your congressman and other congressmen out? Is it worth your activism to stand shoulder to shoulder with Dennis Kucinich? I know the quality and the caliber of the people who listen to this program, and I know what your answer is. You're sitting there and you're saying, yes, yes it is. And you're going to do something. And you've been doing something. And even when times were darkest, you never quit. And you never gave up, because you knew in your heart that what you knew was right and correct and the decent thing. And now we have a chance to start making it happen. If it doesn't happen, and we didn't try, whose fault is it? I'm not playing the blame game, but if it doesn't happen and we didn't try, whose fault is it? You cannot win if you do not play. Let's go to the phones and our good friend Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
You know, you gave me an image that's going to give me nightmares.
Oh, which one?
The one of Bush as Norman Bates. I can just I can just see him running amok with a great big honking knife.
Georgie? Yes, Mother?
Heading for the shower. But that's not what I call.
I understand.
Phil was talking about what he could do to make a difference.
And what all of us can do.
Anybody, you download Skype, and then you call not only your congressional district, you call everybody's congressional district, every senator, every House member. Don't forget the White House while you're at it. They pay attention to phone calls. Be nice, be polite, but get your point across, and keep doing it. It won't cost you nothing.
Yeah, Skype's free.
Yeah, but it will get the point across. They will get paper. Really pay attention to phone calls.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah. Now, the reason I called.
Okay.
Dear Gordon Smith, that was such a nice speech, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And it was...
Day late and a dollar short, but, you know.
It was such a crock. The reason dear Gordon made that speech is because when he was elected... He was elected by a bunch of dry land farmers who basically elected him on the, quote, family value thing. Now, those farmers...
Now, you might be... Susan, you might be going into some social or geographical descriptions of Oregon that others aren't familiar with.
Okay, a bunch of wheat farmers.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, these people, they're interested in their farms, their families... And
water rights are big, right?
Water rights and keeping the gays from marrying.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yes. Okay. So he played into that and he went into office. Okay, now comes
Well, when was it? I mean, when is he, Susan, I don't mean to interrupt, but when is he up for re-election?
He's up for re-election in 2008.
Hot diggity.
Yeah. Okay, now he has been in office, you know, for quite a few years, and they no longer have a farm bill worthy of the name. In fact, the farmers back there are in deep, deep trouble, and they can only blame one person.
Gordon Smith.
Gordon Smith is fighting to save his life. He looked around. What can I do to save my neck?
Any chance of Congressman Wu stepping up and taking the fight to him, or any good liberals like that? Do you expect a credible opposition in 2008?
Well, you know what I did? When I heard about what Cynthia McKinney did, I emailed her and asked her to move to Oregon and run for Senator Gordon.
Oh, my God. Oh, those wheat farmers just haven't imagined anything.
Wow.
Eunice, come look at who's running for the Senate. It'll be straight. Oh my God! It'll be straight out of Blazing Saddles. Eunice, the new sheriff's a.
we kind of hope Wu will stay where he's at because he's built up an incredible amount of seniority.
Yeah, that's true, and he's a dandy.
Yeah.
Still trying to get him on the program.
Yeah. What we're hoping for is that we'll be able to get somebody in 2008 because right now he knows he's in deep, deep hot water because these farmers aren't taking his platitudes anymore. And that was the main reason why he went to go against the war in Iraq. Otherwise, he'd still be a good little soldier.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, because he's still just as much a freeper as he ever was.
But he's going to reinvent himself as a knee-jerk, no-more-war liberal?
Oh, yeah. Anything to get himself back in Washington.
You ever heard of John Lim?
Spell it.
L-I-M?
Not offhand.
Okay, I'm getting a request to, I guess, some Oregonian politician type. But,
that doesn't mean anything because I don't necessarily, hear everything that goes on in Oregon.
Right, but you're responsible for it, don't you understand? You and Gene, you are the state of Oregon to us.
Oh, and by the way, somebody was mentioning about the oath that the soldiers take.
Yeah, I went and looked that up while we were. Yeah.
There's also another part of that oath. To obey the lawful orders of their superior officer.
Right.
Heavy on the lawful. Now.
Well, and that's what's got Aaron Watata where he
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Now, if those soldiers have this, admittedly, this will get them a court-martial, but if a soldier ends up in a situation where he determines with his own conscience that he's being asked to commit an unlawful act, he can refuse it and pull a court. And
mm-hmm.
he can prove it. They can't touch him.
Well, that's a possibility. But you know, the thing is that whole lawful thing rolls in on itself. It's sort of like the snake swallowing its tail,
yeah.
Because, you know, lawful orders, blah, 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 and, you know, the young second Louis looks at the first lieutenant and says, this is lawful order, it's lawful enough for you, boy.
Right.
And that's, you know, and that's the way the Pentagon defines it. Well, you didn't think it was lawful? Did anybody tell you it was lawful? Well, yeah. Okay, then it was lawful. And see, that thing is that's fatally flawed in and of itself, because that means that any war crime that any superior officer says is lawful automatically becomes lawful.
No, actually, a bunch of guys ended up swinging from a noose in Nuremberg.
Well, they weren't us. We're big, and we're, you know, people think we're strong, And as a consequence, there, you know, it goes back to the Melian dialogue from the Peloponnesian War, where the debate between the Spartans and the Athenians and the Melians, and the statement is made: great nations do what they wish, small nations do what they must. So we can impose the reasonable strictures such as the law that came out of Nuremberg on other nations, but we are damn sure not going to let anybody apply it to us. Witness the fact that, and the right wingers had a hissy of monumental proportions and still continue to do so periodically, Susan, at the notion that we might sign on to a worldwide war crimes tribunal bill.
And we
haven't, and we won't.
We should sign on to it, and the first person we should hand over to The Hague is George W. Bush.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cheney right behind him.
Yeah, and a nice little doghouse for Tony Blair. Sure, why not? I mean, the shoe certainly fits. And yeah, parade the rest of them behind him: Rummy, Condi, Wolfowitz, Pearl. Why do you think this article is in Vanity Fair? This is not flattering to any of these people, and yet they sat down knowing full well what David Rose was intending to write about. They are trying to put as much distance between themselves and the Bush administration as they possibly can, because A, they want to get away from the Bush administration screw-ups, they want to get away from the policy screw-up, and they want to continue to get rich, because they think that down the road, and maybe they honestly do, maybe they're this mad, maybe they are this sprayed roach crazy, that they think that there's another guy out there who can actually fight this kind of a war and make it come out the way that they have fantasized it should.
No, God help us. God has helped us all. Oh.
Yeah, but don't you see the truth of it?
Yeah.
Scary, ain't it?
Kenneth
Edelman is out there waiting for the next guy who can actually pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
They may legitimately believe, because this is what they're saying: our plan was good. The Bush people were screw-ups.
Oh. Yeah.
Go read it. I mean, it'll curl your hair. VanityFair.com. It's called Neo Culpa. It's online. You can get it for free, and it'll make you scream in your sleep.
I can hear my dead mother in the back of my head, and my dead father, creeper though he was, blundering. Two wrong don't make a right.
Yeah, and this is more than two wrongs. This is three or four or five or six wrongs if you read the whole article.
And I cannot help but thinking of Nuremberg. If it's wrong in Nuremberg, it's wrong here.
Damn right. It sure is. It's philosophically wrong, it's legally wrong, it's morally wrong, it's culturally wrong, socially wrong, physically wrong. It is absolutely wrong. I mean, it's like Platonic ideal wrong.
And I'm about to say something that will probably get me a visit from the Men in Black.
Okay. Do we need to turn the delay on, because they'll visit me too, Susan?
No, because this has to do with legalities.
Okay.
I sincerely hope that at one point in time, in a peaceful legal process,
there you go,
the entire crew ends up swinging from a rope.
Well, if that is a peaceful, well, see, that's the thing. If we were to turn them over to The Hague, they wouldn't.
The Hague.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore.
Well,
not Milosevic. They wouldn't have done it to Saddam. That's one of the reasons. I mean, frankly, Saddam should have been taken to The Hague. If Saddam was the worldwide threat and worldwide neo-Hitler that he was painted up to be by the neocons, then he needed a cot right next to Milosevic.
Well, to me, I'm one of those people, the worst thing you can do is lock somebody up for the rest of their life.
See, that's the way I see it.
It's kinder to kill them. The worst, as far as I'm concerned, it's even worse. Lock them up in a cage for the rest of their life in The Hague. Never let them come home.
Well, you know, right. And at this point, though, I think all of that aside, Susan, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but all of that aside, I would be perfectly content to have the man and his vice president, because, you know, we don't have to impeach Condi or any of the other cretins. They just go with the administration.
First two.
Get Cheney and get George. Legally and peacefully and constitutionally, this I keep trying to emphasize, this process is in the Constitution, and it's not decorative.
Yep.
Constitutionally removed from office. And you know what? I would bet you a nickel. Because it's about all I got to bet with.
Yeah, you and me both.
I would bet you a nickel that if I had Dennis Kucinich on this program right now, he would tell us both that we were wrong. Because I asked him about it in 2004, and he said, forget that, get away from it, you got to beat this guy.
I don't know. I really don't know. I did, by the way, send the link for the post about his candidacy and the Now list to the Kucinich campaign.
Oh, good. Wonderful. Thank you. Well, we're gonna let them know that we're on board, and hopefully we'll put a big prominent banner across the top of the website that links to theirs, because there is a Kucinich candidacy website, and I'm sure there'll be another one. I'm not constrained by the Federal Election Commission, not constrained by the FCC, and by we, the Head On Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
And we can openly advocate for Dennis Kucinich. And we'll have a meeting, and I hope that's my position, and I'm not going to shrink from it. I hope that's the overall position of the network.
At the very least, George, why don't you take Cheney and your family
and go to Paraguay.
And go to Paraguay and stay there. Renounce your citizenship.
I already speak the Spanish. I'm going to be welcomed there as a liberator.
Oh, God, he has no...
That's about all you can stand, isn't it, Susan?
Yeah.
You have a wonderful night, all right?
You put a bullet in him.
Ah!
No, I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about somebody in Paraguay.
Oh. Okay.
I'm
just checking.
I lived through Kennedy. I lost Bobby. I lost Martin. I'm not ever going to advocate that. Never.
It's awful. We know that. We just need to make it clear for Agent Fred.
Yes, for Agent Fred.
Or he'll unleash a denial of service attack on us or
something.
Yeah,
I really cannot say anything for the people of Paraguay. They will not like George.
Nope. Nope. Of course, I wonder if George is... Well, no, I guess he didn't have a chance to go to Augusto Pinochet's funeral. He would have had a place of honor there, though. All right, Susan, thanks so much.
Yeah, you too, and you have a nice night.
Will do, thanks.
Bye-bye.
And by the way, something showed up in the mail today. Or not the mail, but delivery-wise. It'll take a little bit of electrical hijinks that we'll have to get done. But I'm proud to announce that the next time the power goes down for a good long while, the Head On Radio Network will not. Arriving at this location today was an absolutely brilliant, beautiful to me, high-tech, digital, perfect sine wave, 2-kilowatt inverter generator. I'm speechless. It was done for the horn by a listener whom I will not disclose until that listener has told me it is okay for me to do so. But all I can say is thank you. Thank you so sincerely. Many thanks from all of us for all of the programs that won't have to go down the next time the power goes out here in a high wind. That's right, our power gets taken out by a high wind. Thank you. Thank you so very sincerely. And that's tonight's program. Thank you kindly for the time you spent joining us. I didn't get to all of the calls, and I'm so sorry. We'll get to the rest of them starting out tomorrow night. Okay? Please? My lovely, darling, talented wife, Agnes, produced the program. It was announced by Brian Reznor, engineered by John Fox. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programming on the Head On Radio Network. And like I said, he's not going to ask you for anything. You're just going to have to know that he needs it. So do the right thing. Peter Godbold at Godbold Computer Services of Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. He's not feeling very well. Get well soon, Peter. We worry. We're all family here. We have wonderful moderators
and wonderful. Well, Susan's one of them, and Gene is the other. Our news bloggers at headonradionetwork.com, they do a magnificent job. And, of course, everything on the horn happens because there are several thousand dedicated members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters who get up every day and they go out and they build the American dream. And they also support us, and we're trying to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. The president continues his so-called listening tour to hear advice on how to possibly change course in the Iraq war. He is now expected to deliver a speech to the nation about any policy changes in January, not by Christmas, as was earlier expected. President Bush met with Iraq's Sunni Vice President Tariq al-Hashimi today in Washington. He also heard from senior military commanders in Iraq via video conference. The latest ABC News Washington Post poll finds that 7 out of 10 Americans disapprove of how President Bush is handling the Iraq war. Also, 6 in 10 state that the Iraq war was not worth fighting. In a main square in central Baghdad today, at least 63 people, mostly day laborers looking for work, were killed by two car bombs that exploded nearly simultaneously. As many as 200 people were wounded. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, a Shiite, blamed the attack on the Sunnis. An Associated Press cameraman was shot to death today in the northern city of Mosul. He is the third AP employee to be killed while covering the Iraq war. The Committee to Protect Journalists says that at least 89 journalists have been killed in Iraq since the war began. The Israeli Supreme Court today ruled that Palestinians could seek compensation from Israel for damages caused by the Israeli army. The court today unanimously threw out a law that prevented the Palestinians from seeking compensation if they have been harmed by Israeli combat operations. The Saudi ambassador to the United States, Prince Turki Al-Fazal, abruptly resigned today after only 15 months on the job, turned back home to Saudi Arabia to spend more time with his family, according to diplomatic sources. In 6 U.S. states today, federal agents raided meat processing plants as part of an immigration raid. An unknown number of illegal immigrants were arrested. They are suspected of taking part in an identity theft ring. Operations at all 6 plants of the Swift